Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week of Conversation Radio right here on America's liberal voice, The Horn. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid, but you know that. Although there are the occasional stray brand new listeners who don't know that, so that's who I am, and I'm so glad you're you, and I'm so glad that we are all here together to begin this new week. Let's see, reviewing last week, we got 4 days of broadcasting and 1 day of technical nightmare. But it wasn't for want of intention. This week we're shooting for all five. I tell you, we're shooting for all 5 days. And I'm sorry about the mix-ups and mistakes, but some of these things are rather hard to avoid. But we will eschew missing any days this week. We, you know, me, that mouse in my pocket. We are not amused. Oh, I tell you what, it's coming. I'm glad the weekend has passed, and wonderful show from John Fox last night. You know, there is some actual live programming on the Horn over the weekend. The rest of the programming is stunningly awesome as well. I hope you got a chance maybe to listen to Rick Smith in the previous hour. That was his show from yesterday. He, of course, is very much pro-labor, very much for the working class, very much the straight-up, hard-working, liberal, progressive, and he comes to you from Pennsylvania. And I hope, drop him a line, let him know that you think he's doing a good job. There's about 8 dozen places to go this evening. Dim Leader had his farewell press conference today, and that was abundantly weird. And it seems appropriate that we would start with that. And, in fact, what we will particularly start with is a creation from the mind of Sue, ELO, our chat room den mother, moderator, videographer, and, autodidact genius, as far as I am concerned. And it's a little goodbye medley for Dim Leader. And it seems, like I said, in as much as he gave his farewell to the press today, and generally went out the same way he came in other words, making a braying ass of himself. Now let's run this. And thanks and appreciation to Sue for providing it to us.
It's all over.
honest to God, when you think about that ignorant, hateful, pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout exiting Washington, D.C., doesn't the air just smell a little cleaner? Doesn't it smell just a little bit sweeter? Doesn't the breath of life go a little bit more deeply into your lungs just knowing that you're going to live in a world that doesn't have George W. Bush pulling its strings anymore? Isn't that refreshing? Isn't water a little bit wetter? Isn't it a little bit cooler going down the back of your parched and thirsty throat? Isn't America, if not fixed, at least an appreciably better place without George Bush befouling the nest? Isn't it just? So, yeah, I enjoyed the heck out of that. I think I'll be playing that more and more as the days go by. For yea, verily, according to the countdown clock, we're down to single digits. The countdown clock in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. We're down to 7 days, 17 hours, 49 minutes, and 24, 23, 21, I missed 22, 20 seconds. Yeah. It just feels somehow better. Decidedly better. And although the Johnny on the spot Washington press corps has never been known for its decisive action, even they today at Bush's final press conference were somehow not quite able to get all squishy and misty-eyed about this national embarrassment finally leaving the office he should never, ever, ever have occupied.
It has been an honor to work with you. I meant what I said when I first got up here. I wish you all the very best. I wish you and your families all the best. God bless you.
You can count the claps. The dadgum photographer corps' motor drives were louder than the applause was. You know, I think the claps are so finite that, and bear in mind, it's not like there was, you know, only two or three members of the press corps. The White House press room was chock full. And listen.
You and your families all the best. God bless you.
I don't count more than a dozen claps. It was just awkward. This goes on, this whole clip is all of 26 seconds long. There's the mad rush of motor drives and flashes popping. But clapping? Not so much. See ya! And that's it. Not with a bang, but with a whimper, doth he leave the global stage. That's... Gee. That almost rises to the level of an open slur. But after what he had stood there, and once again done to the Johnny on the spot Washington press corps, it's really not surprising. I guess today was George's valedictory of sorts, wasn't it? I don't guess it qualifies as a vade mecum. But valedictory, yeah. Yeah. Although valedictorian usually indicates someone with a passing level of intelligence. Not so much this time. And there were two things. Oh, you know, I guess it would have been just as well to have queued up Elvis or Frank Sinatra singing My Way. Mistakes, I've made a few. Yeah. But George has never made any mistakes. Nope. It's other people's fault. You know, like this.
Yeah.
You said in an interview earlier this weekend, one of these exit interviews, that
this is the ultimate exit.
You think the Republican Party needs to be more inclusive. Who needs to hear that message inside the Republican Party?
Yeah, you see, I am concerned that in the wake of the defeat, that the temptation will be to look inward and to say, well, here's a litmus test you must adhere to.
Oh, Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, where are you when I need you? Did you catch that?
It's to be more inclusive. Who needs to hear that message inside the Republican Party?
Yeah, you see, I am concerned that in the wake of the defeat, that the temptation will be to look inward.
Dr. Freud, white courtesy phone. Dr. Freud, white courtesy phone. Emergency, code nuts. The temptation will be to look inward. I guess maybe old Plato's not one of those guys that George was hanging out reading after all, now was he? No! Ha! The unexamined life. Come on, everybody, we all know this. George is probably one of the few that had the unexamined life is not worth, come on, living! Yeah. Bueller, W. Because, you know, from the time that he was shoving M-80s up the hindquarters of frogs, lighting them and watching them blow up, looking inward has never been the long suit of George W. Bush. It's always been someone else's fault. You know, counting the votes in Florida in 2000. Would have impeded his progress to the White House. I mean, that's direct from the pleadings in Bush v. Gore. Counting the votes in Florida would be harmful to George Bush's candidacy for the presidency. Yeah. So, George doesn't want to be looking inward or anything. He doesn't want you know how it is with the Bush tribe. They don't navel gaze. You know, that's what us liberals, we sit around thinking about stuff. And instead, remember the loyal Bushies in Ron Suskin's article? The one guy said, you be studying history and we'll be out creating our own reality. You know, generally, when you create your own reality, that usually takes a little help of some sort or another, some psychoactive substance to create one's own reality. Oh, wow, the walls are breathing. But George Bush has lived in his own reality all of his misbegotten, ill-spent, ill-advised, worthless life. He was what certainly wasn't looking inward when he engaged in insider trading to screw the shareholders of one of his busted oil companies. Now, was he? No. He was just acting for his own personal gain. Any looking inward might have found that there was a moral element to what he was doing that was less than tasteful, less than ethical, less than human. But we're not done.
And to say, well, here's a litmus test you must adhere to. This party will come back. And
when, George? When's your party going to come back? I'm just asking. When is the party that is now comprised of mostly pasty-faced, doughy old white guys from the old Confederacy, a handful of the Western hypocrites, and women who have no respect for themselves whatsoever, all of whom are pretty much exclusively white in a decreasingly white nation? When is that party going to come back, George? Do tell us about it.
But the party's message has got to be that different points of view are included in the party. And
Different points of view are included in the party. You can believe that gay people should all live in the closet, or you can believe that all gay people should be taken out and stoned to death, just like in the Old Testament. See, there's two different points of view that the Republican Party can wrap its scaly arms around. You can believe that men know better what women should do with their insides, or you can believe that all women are fundamentally whores who need to be controlled by a paternalistic society. See, there's two more. There's two more diverging viewpoints that the Republican Party can wrap its reptilian claws around. You can believe that foreign countries are subject to the military whim of an ideological dictate run made by an ignorant moron, or you can believe that, you see my point.
For example, the immigration debate.
Oh, oops, I forgot the brown people.
That's obviously a highly contentious issue. And the problem with the outcome of the initial round of the debate was that some people said, well, Republicans don't like immigrants. Now, that may be fair or unfair, but that's the image that came out.
No, George, no. See, there's another lack of that inward-looking business, navel-gazing. That's not the image that came out. That's the reality that existed and continues to exist while you're busy living in your own reality.
And, you know, if the image is we don't like immigrants, then there's probably somebody else out there saying, well, if they don't like the immigrants, they probably don't like me as well.
What the hell does that mean? I'm sorry. I try to be fairly cogent. But you know, if they don't like immigrants, they probably don't like me as well. There are entire classes of this society that know that you and your stinking little fat, pasty-faced, doughy white guy party don't like them. Anyone darker than a flesh-colored Band-Aid you don't like. Anyone who wants to control their own reproductive health you don't like. Anyone who speaks English with an accent other than that of Crawford or Kenny Bunkport, you don't like. So it's not the image that they think that. It's the reality that they know that. And I'm at a loss to figure out why this is so difficult to comprehend, George. You're a Republican. Republicans are that way. You are not and have never been a member of an inclusive party. Even in the Reconstruction South, when the Republicans held some sway in the occupied southern states, they used inclusion as a means to fatten their own wallets and their own holdings. Cronyism and predatory capitalism have been the watchwords of the Republican Party since the day that it was founded in that log cabin in Wisconsin. Just has been. This is not by any means to say that the Democrats have not had their problems, but we have taken positive steps to solve them. Whereas your party, George, took the short-term benefit of things like the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act when Lyndon Johnson rightly said, we have just lost the South in the Democratic Party for a generation. And you were happy with that. And you run, your party runs on the politics of fear and division and hatred and bigotry and prejudice. It's a party of people like Illinois Republican Representative Mark Kirk, who couldn't support a resolution praising Israel's actions of slaughter, murder, and mayhem in Gaza fast enough. Representative Mark Kirk said, and I quote, to misquote Shakespeare, something is in rotten. Well, there's a professional broadcasting moment. Quote, to misquote Shakespeare, something is rotten in Gaza, and now it's time to take out the trash. There's your Republican Party. There is the source of most of the world's problems today. Because America sneezes and the world gets the flu. I know I don't really need to say this, but Shakespeare never said it's time to take out the trash. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. Speaking to the fact, this is one of those context moments, mind you. Speaking to the fact that there was an internal rot in the government, the state of Denmark. Something is rotten in the state of Denmark. Well, at least Mark Kirk didn't have wasn't stupid enough to say something is rotten in the state of Gaza, because Gaza is not a state. Gazans are an occupied people. They are certainly not anything approaching a state. It is not misquoting Shakespeare to say something is rotten in Gaza and now it's time to take out the trash. It isn't even remotely Shakespearean. Because if indeed something is rotten in Gaza, the rottenness is an external rottenness born in places like the United States and Israel. To say that there is something rotten in Gaza at a time when babies are being uncovered from the rubble of their homes nestled against their dead mother's breasts. Well, that displays a level of disdain for human life that is almost impossible to quantify or qualify. Something is rotten in Gaza, and now it's time to take out the trash. You know, trashy little Hamas rocketeer babies, 3 years old. 5-year-old Gaza trash. Pregnant Gazan mother trash. Just saying. Meanwhile, we find out today that between Thursday and Friday, Condoleezza Rice, who apparently is feeling the flames of hell licking at the toes of her Manolo Blahnik. She wanted to take the lead in a vote for a ceasefire at the United Nations Security Council. Now, this is not coming from Bob Kincaid's mouth. This is coming from the mouth of Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert. He gave a speech in Israel in which he explained that he, by God, had told George Bush what to do. He said that when he found out that Condoleezza Rice was ready to support the resolution, that he picked up the phone. Now listen to this. These are the words of Ehud Olmert. Grieve for your nation, America. He said, in the night between Thursday and Friday, when the Secretary of State wanted to lead the vote on a ceasefire at the Security Council, we did not want her to vote in favor. I said, get me President Bush on the phone. They said he was in the middle of giving a speech in Philadelphia. I said, I don't care. I need to talk to him now. And he got off the podium and spoke to me. I told him the United States could not vote in favor. It cannot vote in favor of such a resolution. He immediately called the Secretary of State and told her not to vote in favor. My entire being is shaking at anger from this. We are no longer a free people. When the Prime Minister of a little itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, otherwise inconsequential nation can tell, not ask, by God, I just read you a quote. He doesn't say, I asked him, or I requested of him, or I suggested to him. He says, I told him the United States could not vote in favor. It cannot. Not must not, not should not, not ought not may not. It cannot vote in favor of such a resolution. See, every now and then I get these emails from folks who tell me about, you know, the worldwide Zionist conspiracy and the Bilderberg and the Rothschilds and, you know, blah, 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 the Jews are running the world! And I think that's just crazy. It's nuts because it's not true. But where George Bush is concerned, there's an element of truth in the fact that the President of the United States, at least theoretically the most powerful human being on the face of the earth, can be told what to do by the Prime Minister of an itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, otherwise in the rest of the world inconsequential nation. And I am embarrassed. Now, before I have to get in an argument with somebody about when Bob said something anti-Semitic, kiss my ass, I did not. I would feel the same way if the president of Guatemala or Malaysia or any other country on the face of this earth had called the President of the United States and told him what American policy would be and that he could not and what he cannot and not asked but told him what to do. I am sick at this. You think maybe, just maybe, there might have been some common sense in George Washington's words, lo, so many generations ago, when he advised on the way out of the White House, when he advised presidents who would follow him to, and I quote, avoid foreign entanglements. You think there might have been just maybe 10 cents worth of common sense in that? Just a little bit. But now I have to read something like this, and I'm sick at my gut. Am I to understand that generations of my family have fought and bled and died, not only on this continent, but on others? So that the leader of an itsy-bitsy, teensy-weensy, otherwise inconsequential nation can tell the president of this nation what to do? Am I to understand? Is that what I got to swallow now? Is that the poop sandwich that America has to eat? And the question is why? Why? And you know the answer. Because the American people have fetishized Israel. If we think of the Arab world at all, we don't think much of it, for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which, the fact that, among others, the royal house of Ibn Saud is the biggest waste of oxygen on the planet. But when we do bother to think of them, we seldom think good, and there is much good to be said, and much criticism to be levied as well. We don't think much of the Arabic people. We don't think much of the fact that that our kid gets a good grade. If our kid is struggling or works hard and gets a good grade in algebra, that they have Arabic peoples to thank for it. Friday night at the local watering hole, we belly up to the bar and have an ice cold beer. And we want to make sure that we don't overindulge so that we will not have an alcohol blood registry above 0.08. And we don't think about the fact that it was Arabic peoples who first noticed what alcohol is. There's an article in The Guardian that was cited by Bart Kopp at today's page about 92-year-old Les Paul, the father of the electric guitar. Guitar. We don't think about the Arabic peoples in that regard either. We don't think much about Arabic peoples at all, but the point of the matter is we have been taught through abuse of what we call, what Christian America calls scripture, holy scripture, to fetishize the nation of Israel. And we are chock-a-block, and I want to be understood on this. This is not a criticism of a culture or a people. This is a criticism of a nation. Because that fetishization is of the nation of Israel, and we have, as I started to say, we were chock-a-block with the TV ministers and TV evangelists who are forever running around citing that stupid parable of the fig tree. Well, see, this is how it is. The fig tree is Israel, and the blossom is like when it becomes a nation, brothers and sisters, and then it says, and after a generation after the fig tree beareth fruit, then I will come again. See, Jesus. Only problem is Israel's been around more than a generation now and still no Jesus. But that doesn't stop them from stalking up and down the damn stage telling America that we got to care more about Israel than we care about our own nation. I say to you truly that if America's children were walking around with their ribs sticking out, we would still find money to give to Israel. Because we have fetishized a nation. Now, I'll leave it up to you to sort out the meaning of fetishized. Fetishes can be either healthy or unhealthy, and in this case, it is very unhealthy. So, I'm embarrassed. A man who has ordered the slaughter of children has told another man who has ordered the slaughter of children what to do in his official capacity as President of the United States. And if I had a nickel's less worth of self-restraint, I would be sitting here weeping for my nation. How many apologies do we owe to our patriot dead for the blood they shed? so that a man who thought so little of the United States itself that he couldn't even be bothered to defend this, or fight, screw defending, there was no defending in Vietnam, but to fight for this nation when he was called upon to do so because he did not have a moral compunction against going to Vietnam. This is all, these are so many of the, just, these are just the little things that make it so, so good to tell George Bush to, you know, not let the door hit him on the ass and on the way out. We've only got 7 days and change more of this kind of embarrassment. And those 7 days cannot pass quickly enough to suit me. Now, I've babbled away, but I had to get that said. Let's hope I didn't lose the callers. Hey, welcome to the program.
Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm a little bent.
Yeah, well, put it this way. I'm not sleeping easy until the 7 days are over. God knows what skullduggery he can do.
Yeah, there's, you know, if you're determined to, you can cram a lot of evil into 7 days.
Yeah, just look at that executive pardon list.
I know, and I still think, you know, it's gonna be a beauty when it hits.
You all screw yourselves. I'm going to Dallas.
You're dealing with a sociopath on the worst order. And you know what I also say? Make sure when he steps down and we start sending him cases of liquor.
Well, you know, they're saying that, you know, he said at one point, Kevin, you know, after I'm president, I think I'll go around the lecture circuit, you know, replenish the old coffers. Because, you know, he's gone broke being president. But it turns out nobody's really interested in having him come and speak anywhere. The whole world has said, no thanks, we've heard enough.
Well,
and so it wouldn't be surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he just started ordering the brown liquor in and drinking it through a straw.
Yeah, well, I hope so. Because a drunk Bush is always good. You know, because when they're sober, they're dangerous.
True enough.
You know, the grandfather, Prescott, had a serious drinking problem, too.
Oh, yes. There's plenty of them, and I think I don't think anyone will ever accuse George H.W. of being a teetotaler.
Yeah. Well, no. And the thing is, you know what? When they are drinking, they're actually nice people.
There are some people for whom the alcohol is an ameliorative. For some, it's a problem. For others, it's a benefit.
Yeah. I've had my own little battles in that department. And, you know, I'm telling you, people like them need to be drinking. They are too dangerous to keep sober.
Well, see, that's the thing. I can imagine George Bush just drunker than Adam's off ox with the lampshade on his head. I love you, man.
Yeah, and totally harmless. You know, those guys you end up liking. But it's when they become sober, they become angry and,
yeah,
you know, and destructive.
Indeed. And see, that's the thing. It's these, well, like I've said all, you know, these are sober people. Sober people have done this. It's like I said the other night, you know, the last statistic I saw many years ago, 48% of highway fatalities are caused by drunk drivers. That means 52% are caused by the sober ones.
And, you know, it's like some of the most dangerous people were teetotalers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, oh, and another thing, the whole Israeli thing goes back to AIPAC again.
Well, sure it does.
All roads lead to AIPAC.
Well, you know, we are at the Horn doing our little part. If you go to headonradionetwork.com and have a quick look, you'll see something up there called Boycott 729. Now, I don't know the details of this, but apparently 729 is the international barcode prefix for products coming from Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about barcodes, so I'm taking it on faith that this is so.
Mm.
But, you know, because, you know, I'm one of those people, Kevin, that hollers, carries on, complains, whatever, that consumer choices are actually moral and ethical choices. That's why there are products I absolutely will not purchase, and there are stores I absolutely will not enter without a damn good reason for doing so.
Oh, yeah.
A compelling reason, I should say.
Why do you think I got off gas?
Yeah.
Every gallon of gas kills someone's child. And, you know, like I said, I'm fortunate to be able to do it.
So, you know, to that end, I don't think, you know, I don't buy a lot of Israeli produce or Israeli goods, but I'm going to look at the barcode, and if I see 7 and 2 9, it's going back on the shelf, period.
Yeah. Well, I think some things, because they're very big in the biomedical, and if you've got to go through an MRI, that's an Israeli product.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oops.
They invented it.
Yeah, but I mean, like the CT scanners and stuff are all built by GE.
Oh.
Or at least that was the big logo that was on the side of the last one that I saw.
Yeah.
I think maybe the last CT that I ran through was a Toshiba.
No.
But, you know, we I don't know how much impact it'll have, but it's something I can participate in.
Yeah. And the thing is, they can't make you buy their stuff. And, you know, it's like, because to me, protesting now, it's a waste of steel, leather, and time. But it's where your dollars get thrown to, in the direction of your dollar. Then they'll start paying attention.
Yeah, indeed. Well, you holding up all right?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, I'm gonna be flying out of the country in 2 weeks or 3 days for the family thing.
Yeah.
And then because, even though they both died that day, you know, gathering everyone in one roof.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're all spread out now, all over the place. So, you know, I'll be doing that on the weekend of the 25th. So, but I'll call you before then.
Okay. Do please. I look forward to hearing from you, and hang in there.
Okay, I will. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Mom.
Take care, Kevin. Bye now.
All right.
Calling from New York City, our buddy Kevin, and rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Juanita.
You know what your problem is?
What's my problem?
You hate George Bush.
Well, bless my soul. I think you've nailed it. But I don't hate him for being George Bush. I hate him for what he's done to my country.
No, you just hate him without any reason.
Yeah, that's me, irrational Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, what? Yeah, Charles Krauthammer invented what? Bush derangement syndrome?
Oh, me. I had to say that, Bob. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I know the place from whence it comes. So,
oh, yeah.
Because I don't think I'm outpacing you by much.
You got that right.
Because I'm guessing he's not on your Christmas card list.
No. He said something about if he thought he'd done wrong or something, he couldn't look at himself in the mirror. Good Lord.
Well, that must mean there are no. Well, I would imagine what with Dick Cheney wandering around the place from time to time, all the mirrors are gone anyway. Because you know his
right.
His reflection doesn't show up in one.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, the White House chef, vice presidential chef at least, probably isn't even allowed to have garlic anywhere on the premises for cooking purposes.
Yeah. Well, doesn't he stay in his little safe or his big safe most of the time?
Yeah, that's where the coffin with the native soil from the ancient land is, where he sleeps every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, guess who was on The View today?
Who was that?
I thought maybe you might have heard.
No, I've been in my media bubble today.
Ann Coulter.
Ew.
Yeah.
So they're out there hustling for her too.
Does it
never end?
At one time last year, Barbara said she didn't want her on there.
Well, that must mean Barbara got overruled somehow.
Yeah, but. You know, if you've watched the show, usually the guests, they'll say, here they come, and they come out, and they all hug and kiss and all, and then they sit down.
Right.
But when they came back, she was just sitting down. Because I just wanted to see how skinny she was. She was sitting down.
No, you might have you only thought you wanted to. You didn't want to. It's creepy. It's scary.
But before she had come out, Barbara has read part of her book. It was something about, well, she's blaming all the single mothers for all the problems. Because based on some kind of statistics, you know, and, of course, most of it sounded to me like most of it's about black people. But Barbara just read part of her book. And then they were discussing. And anyway, when she was out there, Whoopi was trying to ask her if she was married or she had children and all. She said, because I was a single mother. And anyway, she was just very antagonistic. And,
well, that's her shtick, you know?
Yeah, she didn't, you know, she didn't give it. After a while, they kind of like were ranting at one another because, well, what the heck? But anyway, Barbara said something to her she said something to him about criticizing her before she came out. I said, no, we didn't criticize you. Just we're talking about your book and about Barbara read some of it. Of course, she wasn't having none of that. And Barbara said, well, I want to read another part of your book. She said, yeah, read it like it's Mein Kampf. And I thought for a minute Barbara might have thought about slapping her.
I wouldn't have blamed her a dime's worth if she had.
No. And anyway, then Sherry told her, she said, you know, she said, you don't need to talk to her like that. She said, she's not criticizing you. She's just trying to ask questions. And you don't need to be talking to her. And she said some kind of smart remark, and Sherry just smiled, just forget it. And anyway, then it wasn't much of an interview, you know, except that. But she was just, was blaming, you know, she said single parents were the ones that, or single mothers, which I was one, are to blame for all, like most of the people in prison and all, you know, anything that's wrong. And Whoopi did ask her what she was basing it on, and she said, you know, she wasn't married and she didn't have children and she's not black, you know, and because she was basically what Barbara had read about, you know, is mostly about black people, really. You know, it always, you know, is subtly that way. And so anyway, Whoopi told, she said she was basing it on, she said liberal surveys is what she was basing it on. And Whoopi told her, she said, well, those surveys have been proven to be wrong. But that was basically it. And then it kind of, you didn't know if they were going to show her when they came back, but they came back, she wasn't there.
Well, none of that is within the typical protocols of the program, is it?
No.
I mean, it's unusual.
Usually they would say, well, you know, thank you for coming or something, you know, but anyway.
Right.
And if anybody wants to see it, it's on TV now. TV, not TV. It's on, if you go on the internet and just look up The View. I found looking that up makes you go directly to their site. You have to put that V on it. It's The View, and then
right.
You can see that if you so choose. And
I got to admit, that would be some tough viewing, Juanita.
But the other thing was that Elizabeth and her husband and her two children, they had a private audience with George at the White House, and they showed that. she said, he's just totally different. You know, he's just totally different than his public persona, you know. But Sherry, her and Sherry had gone up to Washington, D.C., and Whoopi said, well, where was Sherry in all of this? And Sherry said, that's what I was wondering.
Oh, dear.
She didn't pass the grade, you know.
Oh, Lordy.
So they're going to show what she did up there later this week.
Merciful heaven.
But you have said, you know, I said something to the high board, and you said, well, it'll get interesting. And I said, wow.
I know. Well,
she was so rude to, and you know, another one that was rude to her, she was on about a year or so ago, was Laura Ingraham.
Well, Laura Ingraham is the slightly less skeletal twin daughter of different mothers to Ann Coulter.
They're definitely sisters. They're like Star and all of them, you know, the.
Right. Yeah.
What is his name? McClellan?
No.
The one in the Senate?
Oh, McConnell?
Yeah, and Karl Rove and.
Yeah, the whole evil cabal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, I just checked out. I just checked out MediaMatters.org because when it comes to coverage of sleazy right wing tramping about by the networks, you can always count on Media Matters to be right on top of things. And you know what, Juanita, I'm not seeing anything here about the Anthrax Coulter being on the View. There's a thing here about her being on Geraldo, but nothing about the View.
He loves her. Geraldo loves her.
But the thing that I'm wondering here, I wonder if the View, and this is not me being critical of Media Matters because they're one of the tools that I use on a daily basis, just keeping up with, you know, media sleaze. But I wonder if the View is on Media Matters the radar. I wonder if they understand how many people tune into that. Because, you know, while I'm kind of limited because there's one TV in the house. We're not we're not one of those, you know, TV in every room kind of families.
No, I'm not either.
We've got babies and they watch a lot of children's programming.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff that's not toxic. And so as a consequence, I really don't spend any meaningful time with the television. On the other hand, however, there are a lot of people who do take their cues, to coin a phrase, from The View.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder
more so now.
And I'm hoping maybe this appearance didn't slip past the Media Matters folks, because from the way you're describing it, they need to be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, if I knew how to inform them, I would.
Well, you know what? I will. I'll do
okay.
it. I'll take care of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and ELO has found the YouTube clip of Anthrax Coulter at YouTube. It's at YouTube. So if you just go.
Oh, it's on YouTube.
Yeah, at least for the time being. So
yeah,
it's there for those that can stomach it.
Even Elizabeth looked a little startled at some of the stuff she was saying.
Well, see, you know, she's an idiot. But the fact of the matter is she tries to at least be a credibly well-put-together idiot, whereas Ann Coulter is simply a shrill, shrieking, braying ass who has transformed herself into an absolute carnival freak show.
Well, my introduction to her and some of the others was Bill Marshall show.
Sure. The old politically incorrect.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
Boy, I tell you, and it was during Clinton's impeachment.
Yeah.
He broke the law. Didn't have anything to do with that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the one I remember about her the most from back then was her assertion that Bill and Hillary Clinton had a Christmas tree that they had decorated with condoms.
In what?
Just nothing. Never mind. Just
decorated in what? Oh.
Condoms.
Oh, let me tell you the worst thing she said today. I just made me think about it for some reason. They asked her what did she think about Caroline Kennedy's bid for.
Oh dear. This can't be good. This doesn't end well.
No, it wasn't. What she said about Bill about her daddy. She said he was a drug addict. He was the venereal ridden. I can't remember what all she said about him.
Lord, that's almost.
I mean, it's just. I can't even remember all the words.
The show started off pretty nice, and now I've got an upset stomach.
No,
it's not you. It started out with George Bush bowing and scraping to Ehud Olmert, and it's gone downhill from there.
No.
Oh, merciful God. I'm surprised.
I almost forgot to tell you about that.
That's just nasty. God, but so is she. Juanita, thank you for keeping up with this so I don't have to. I appreciate it. I sincerely do.
Okay.
I've got this mental image. Well, never mind, but thank you. And have yourself a great evening, all right?
Okay, and you try to get over your bad will toward that.
History's
going to exonerate him.
Yeah, I know. History's going to think he was the neatest thing since sliced bread, but you know what?
But you know how. They'll rewrite it.
Well, there you go. That's what the Bush Presidential Comic Book Library is for. Exactly.
Okay.
All right, Juanita, take care. Thanks.
Take care, too. Bye-bye.
Have a good night. No, I have this mental image of Juanita being able to wander over to the back fence and just bring out a couple of glasses of iced tea, a couple of wedges of lemon sitting on the sweet iced tea, a couple of wedges of lemon sitting on the edges of the glasses and handing one across and say, what was on the view today? That's one of the beauties of what happens here on the Horn. I kind of like it that way. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, you know, I know I've been calling a lot, but you know.
That's all right. You call all you want. We got more phones.
I'm on vacation. A holiday.
Oh, really? In the south of France, perhaps? Or the Cozumel? Maybe Cabo San Lucas?
No, just from school work.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
You know, nothing as glamorous as that, please.
I wasn't sure. One never knows when someone will join the glitterati and go off and live the good life.
Oh, no. You know, I had my little trip to England last year. That was about as glamorous as it gets for me.
Right, but I know the Queen is always pleased to receive you.
Oh, my God. Did you see that son of a bitch today?
Yeah, I did. I ain't over it yet.
No, I was just sort of gobsmacked, and I was so disgusted by the media. They're so disgusting, aren't they? Sort of giggling along with that idiot, you know?
Obsequious is meant to be a pejorative term, and there's nothing you can use to describe the Washington Press Corps apart from obsequious.
Yeah, no, that's what they are, and it was just, I mean, I was more disturbed by that than the chipmunk, because at least he's leaving, but I'm like, you know, what has happened to the media? I mean, they just sort of,
But see, they really showed him, Sandra. They showed him when he said goodbye and God bless you and I hope you all win the lottery and all that silly hokum that he laid out there at the end. They didn't give him an ovation. They showed him. And I mean, you know, I had the audio there and it's true. You can hear more flashes going off and motor drives winding than you can count the claps. There's 12 of them.
Well, I didn't even stick around for all that. So, no clap. That was their way of registering some sort of protest?
Yeah, because, you know, that'll trouble George's sleep.
He don't give a F. That guy is the most obnoxious.
No, he doesn't.
God, he is so foul. I thought I was going to be ill when he was talking about the whole self-pitying thing. This man has caused the death of just hundreds of thousands of people. He is so disgusting, you know? I just can't even look at him. I'm like, can you please just go? Is this some sort of, like, one last sort of, I don't want to make fun of the word torture because it's so real for us now, but it's like he's feel. I feel like I'm being tortured by this motherfucker. I'm sick of him.
It's like one last, you know what a hot foot is. It's like one last little broken match under the shoe sole. It's one last little hot foot from George.
I'm so sick to death of him and his exit interviews and his smirk and his advice to Obama. It's just like, you know what? Please, just, I don't even want to say it because I don't want the CIA coming after me because he's still president. But this guy, he is a piece of work. He really is.
Work doing doing substitution duty, for another word we're thinking of, yes.
Well, yeah, and I just am sort of like, I'm just really appalled. And I can just segue into that weird-ass story from the New York Times saying that they said no to these other cretins, the Israelis. I'm sorry. Those people are out of control. They wanted to take out Iran, and these MFers here have to say no. So they decided we're going to go kill some other Arabs then.
Somebody going to die.
That's the feel I got. I'm like, okay, these bitches need to use the military somehow. They got told by daddy. So they decided, well, can we go shit on the Palestinians for a while instead? I guess they got the okay for that. Listen, this is so foul. I'm just so sick that I'm a part of this. You know?
Well, see, that's like that quote that tormenting of Shakespeare that Kirk guy from Illinois used. Something is rotten in Gaza, and it's time to take out the trash. You know, you just said this is so foul. It reminds me of another Shakespearean line: "Murder most foul." And that's what this is: murder most foul. How many more of these stories do we have to read, Sandra, about literally demolished houses where dead or near dead babies are found clinging to their dead mother's breasts? Is there some sort of quantifiable number of these where we say, okay, well, that's happened 12 times and that's enough?
Well, no. How about the whole idea of telling one family, up to 100 of them, to move to another place and then bomb the place they moved to and kill most of them? I'm sort of stunned by that story, too, and I'm thinking, part of me just thinks there's no way this is really happening. This can't be real.
Okay, I'm going to say something that's going to get me in real trouble here, but frankly, it's from my heart, and it's very real, and, you know, too bad. When you tell an entire group of people to go somewhere because that's where they're going to be safe, and then you kill them?
Yeah.
Am I the only one that gets a little, you know, kind of like the scratch in your throat that you can't, the itch in your throat that you can't scratch, that there's some historical precedent that's really, really evil for doing that, like saying you're going to get a shower?
Hey, there's that, and there's also the whole, just the whole sort of, you know, the Warsaw Ghetto correlation. You can easily make that too.
Well, and then there's another one. I suspect, Sandra, that there is not in the Israeli government, but really, really should be, a department of not using Nazi imagery. Because they have. I don't know if you caught this or not. And I'm not trying to talk over you, but this was one of those that just leaped off the page at me. Israel has now warned Gaza that it will use, wait for it, it's too good, an iron fist. One wonders if they're also passing out iron crosses.
Oh, no. I mean, no, but this...
Iron fist? Please?
No, but you know what? But there is nothing that these people have done. I mean, this is just straight up, I don't know what to call this, because these firecrackers that they keep talking about, they need to stop. It's like, we get it already, and I think everyone else in the world gets it. You know what I mean? Now it's just gratuitous violence from, a regional hegemon who's, I don't know what they're doing, you know, but it's really gratuitous now, and it really needs to stop. I'm like, is this going to go on until the 20th? I mean, what's the end game here? You got any ideas?
I think it really is. It's tied to January the 20th. All of this stuff is so patently, Germanically hateful. warned Islamic militants that they face an iron fist unless they agree to Israeli terms for an end to war. In other words, unconditional surrender.
Oh, you know, not only that, but we want you to not resist, and we're still going to slowly, commit our kind of genocide on you. I mean, this is the option they're giving, because those people, those rockets coming over, that's called resistance when you have nothing. And like you said a while back, how do you create more terrorists? You bomb civilian areas. How about that? What the fuck?
Well,
I'm just really sort of beyond exercise.
Well, I am too. I mean, I've got an email.
Think of it.
I've got an email that I'm looking at here that came from CARE. You know, the organization CARE.
No, you mean the one that if you send money to, you'll be designated an enemy combatant? That one?
Just about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In Gaza, the children of CARE staff member Jawid Harb wonder if they will ever see peace again. Their days are filled with the fear of bombs hitting their home, the threat of running out of food, and no electricity to light their way. Jawed explains with overwhelming sadness in his voice, "I can't really describe what my children are feeling. They burst out crying when it is dark and cold at night, when we listen to the bombs explode like thunder." And it goes on to say that CARE is distributing medical supplies, blankets, heaters, plastic sheeting, yada, yada, yada. And then it says, "You can bring hope to families in crisis. Give now." And there's a button. And I understand all of that. And if I had if the Lord knows what I would do if I had sufficient money to do it with. And by that, I mean any money.
Yeah.
But by the same token, this is all necessary. What CARE is doing and other non-governmental organizations, what they're doing is vitally necessary, but it doesn't address the fundamental problem of Israel's willingness. I mean, how many people have died from the rocket attacks? Four? And they've killed how many Palestinian civilians in retribution? 900? I'm not the math guy, Sandra, but I'm thinking that's disproportionate.
And not only that, but there's been 20 of them from these rockets in the last 8 years. That's the statistic. And to me, I don't understand how, I don't care what kind of propaganda machine the Israelis have, and I'm listening to the apologists over here, and they just sound ridiculous at this point. I was listening to this Lonnie Davis person debating, get this, a professor in a bomb shelter in Israel, explaining, you know, how the Palestinians are being screwed over. These are people in Israel now who are saying, please, this needs to stop, debating some a-hole in Washington saying, no, Hamas must be destroyed. You know, I mean, the absurdity of it would be funny if it wasn't these people dying every hour, you know?
Yeah, and this is, you know, this is a complete envelopment now. Because there's other reporting that not only are the warplanes, supplied by us, of course, not only are American warplanes sold to Israel, pounding what are called in this sort of weaselly, weeny journalism report that I'm looking at here from MSNBC that says, what's the exact quote? Israeli warplanes pounded suspected Hamas positions in Gaza City. Please.
Yeah.
You know, every suspected Hamas position is also a verified civilian location, because the whole area is civilian.
Well, yeah.
But then to add to the mix, Sandra, here's Navy gunboats fired at least 25 shells, setting fires and shaking offices.
So you can say the same for the Blitzkrieg in London and Stalingrad, couldn't you? I mean, those people were at home chilling too, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
And they were terrorists, right?
Well, they were
fighting against the Germans, right?
See, that's where the language gets a little squirrely now, doesn't it?
Well, I just want to explain it to me, because I don't know what the goddamn difference is here.
I don't either. I don't know what the difference is either.
And I want someone to explain to me how come when the people were resisting in London, they were resisting, and these people over here are all mixed up with the terrorists. That's why they're being bombed.
Well, how is it that the Warsaw Ghetto uprising is heroic, but Gaza is an act of terrorism?
No, and it's just, because let's just be honest. Anybody with a, 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 any sense in their head, give it a little bit of thought and know a bit of history, there's no way what Israel is propagating is even reasonable. It's a joke at this point to try to say that, oh, the Hamas is using the Palestinian people as a shield. Come the hell on.
No, they're... Well,
and this is what I hear.
I know, and you know the thing that kind of blows me away is another one of those touchy subjects that always gets people worked up. And, you know, liberals disagree with me and agree with me, and it gets me in some trouble, is whenever I go into the gun issue in the United States, because liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, whatever you want to say, there will always be an element of people who say, well, Bob, I keep guns in my home. Because that's the only guarantee we have against government tyranny. And if they come through my door, I can at least defend my home. Now, get me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it less than a year and a half or so ago, maybe 2 years, that the police in Atlanta executing a no-knock warrant went through a door and blew away a 90-year-old grandmother who was shooting, defending her home? Do I remember that correctly, Sandra?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Well, why is it that you can't explain to gun-crazed America that the Gazans are doing the very same damned thing that these gun that the gun advocates in this country say that they would be willing to do if the government came through their door?
Yeah,
where's the difference in that? I mean, is it just me?
And what's really disturbing is that I can guarantee you that if I called you this time next week, say on the 22nd, we could have the exact same conversation because this shit's probably going to still be going on, okay? And that's what troubles me the most is the sense of powerlessness.
Well, what you said is the end game the 20th, Sandra, and the question that I want answered pretty quick come the 20th is whether or not Barack Obama, within the caveat of, you know, this guy hasn't made an official decision yet. He hasn't signed his name to anything. He's not president yet. But I want to know on January 20th whether or not when Ehud Olmert calls Barack Obama and tells him what to do like he told George Bush what to do, I want to know if Barack Obama is going to play step and fetch it like George Bush did.
Hey, you know what? Who knows? But these people don't act like they're winding down. Because I've been following, you know, the only press that seems to be having interesting stories out of there, and they seem to be increasing their presence there, not decreasing. So,
well, no, that's what this Iron Fist business is about. They're going to send in more of the world's fourth largest military.
Yeah, but the thing is, and the reason why I keep going back to the end game, and, you know, I don't think Obama's getting sworn in is going to make a difference. I mean, I just have a feeling it's still going to be going on because there seems to be all sorts of agendas involved here. You have that, I don't know who's running the war. What's his name? He's running for office there, too.
Oh, she.
His name is Barack, isn't it?
Oh, no, no. I thought you were talking about Zippy Livni. I think she's...
No, I mean the defense minister. Ehud Barak, one of them people.
Oh, Ehud Barak?
Yeah, he's a sociopath, that guy.
Just,
I listened to some of the things he said, and it's just like, yo, dude, you're, something's wrong. Something's not right. Something's really off with those people. I don't know if it's because that country's been embroiled in, you know, war from day one or what, but wow.
But see, this idea that, and you know, George didn't say this in any of his valedictories or anything, but the idea that Ehud Olmert would brag, Sandra, I mean, are you as embarrassed by this as I am? The idea that Ehud Olmert would brag that even in the middle of a speech that he could call and make George Bush stop what he was doing and come take his call so he could give George Bush his marching orders, is that just a little bit embarrassing and sickening?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just incredible. And I'm just wondering why that story is out. You know, what's that about?
Don't worry. It's over at thinkprogress.org. So, you know, the mainstream media probably won't pick it up.
Oh, well, no. I don't mean it so much that. I mean, the fact that sort of information is slipping out. I mean, you know, I just am really curious and concerned about the nature of our
Well, first of all, you know, it's not coming from the Johnny on the spot American press. It's a story published by Agence France-Presse.
Yeah, okay.
And it is a matter of nothing coming from the government, but rather it's a matter of Ehud Olmert bragging about how he's got the leash on George Bush and can drag him around wherever he wants him to go.
Well, this guy has started two wars in his short tenure, this guy, Olmert.
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously a straight-up warmonger in the same vein as Bush, but I don't know. I don't have much faith with Obama. I mean, he spoke up loud and clear when they blew up Bombay, but I ain't heard jack from him. Has he said anything?
Only that business about how he would fight back if there were rockets landing on his daughters.
Well, apparently he said that months ago, and the Israeli press brought that back up again. It wasn't something.
Yeah, but I mean, apart from that, it's crickets.
So, I mean, because he can't not believe that that's not going to be just sort of like a hot piece of shit on his Oval Office desk when he gets there, right?
Well, he's got to know that it is.
It ain't going to be going away.
And, you know, he did claim during the campaign process that he would engage and that he would be active in an attempt to bring about a peace process. How that gets defined, I don't know. You know, you got to remember that Rahm Emanuel's dad said of his son and Israel, he said, you know, my son's the chief of staff. Obama will listen to my son about Israel. It's not like he's some Arab washing the floors.
Oh, God, that definitely wasn't a very good start as far as some sense of balance in the situation. I don't even, you know.
And I know I was supposed to forget about that and think that Rahm Emanuel's dad had just spoken poorly, and that's what Rahm Emanuel said. He really called his dad on the carpet for that.
Oh, yeah, sure. Once again, for the, you know, these stories don't get out, you know, just to embarrass him. Please, that just sets the tone, as far as I can tell.
I think there was an audience for that.
No, I think there was, and it's just sort of like, just to let everyone who needs to know that business as usual.
Ain't no Palestinians going to be getting all uppity.
Right. What are we supposed to think with these people conducting this war like they are? I mean, I realize that, I just didn't think they were just going all out like this, because that is literally like bombing a cage, you know?
Yeah. I mean, really. I mean, one of the things that comes out of this this piece of journalism is the story of a girl, a doctor, and a Hamas militant, Jesus, you know, were killed in one incident in the northern Gaza Strip, said Basim Abu Wardeh, head of Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza. The doctor had rushed to evacuate the wounded from a building where two airstrikes had taken place and was killed by a third strike. Four other medics were injured, and one of them critically. Really? We're blowing away the doctors, too.
Yeah, oh, no, and, you know, and this is like...
And I say we because we're funding this, we're providing the materiel for this, and we are providing the ideological cover for this.
Oh, yeah, and I'll just throw in that, in the meanwhile, you're having wholesale slaughter going on in the Congo, too, just in case anyone was concerned. That situation seems to be getting out of control, too.
But, right. And see, that's the thing. I was trying to create a little bit of perspective earlier in the program. We tend to think because America so thoroughly fetishizes Israel, and I'm not just speaking of the Jewish population. Frankly, I think there are more American Jews who are there are more American Jews who are willing to be critical of Israel than there are American non-Jewish folk. If that makes any sense.
The rapture crowd, or the people who think it's going to bring them closer to glory, I guess.
And because of that, we tend to act like Israel is really something, when Israel is actually one of the biggest, nearest nothings in the world. And that is not a racial comment. That is a geopolitical comment. Israel doesn't matter in India. Israel doesn't matter in China. Israel doesn't matter in just about anywhere except places that were settled by white Anglo-Saxons, frankly. Because it's Great Britain, and this, you know, this goes back to that marvelous book by Barbara Tuchman that I've referenced called Bible and Sword, that talks about the, and it's my phrase, but it's the upshot of what she writes, that talks about the fetishization of the idea of an Israeli state by Britain through its history and by extension by the United States of America.
Right. Sort of like I said before, you know, it's akin to, you know, what the hell we did over here with, I'm sorry, the native population.
Well, sure it is. How is it not?
You know, let's be honest, because those people, I was looking at the map, you know, because when these things happen, you know, if you're a curious person, you try to get educated. Well, so I looked at the map of that area. Are you shitting me with Gaza? Their people are about as close to going in the ocean as it can be. Hello.
And the sooner they do, the better.
No, I just was like, just looking at that, I'm thinking.
No, really. Well, you know, I got I had a back and forth via email regarding my use of the word genocide in progress where Gaza is concerned. And I believe it is. And I believe the evidence supports that it is. Over time, the Gazans will be either absorbed and assimilated or made into a remnant people who can't make trouble anymore. I mean, you know, you don't have to get down to zero for a genocide to be a genocide. Right?
You know, I know. It's just, you know, I don't know what else you can call it. Because I don't hear any other plans about, all I see is people being blown up.
Yeah, I know. I got pictures that I've seen that are in my head. Lord knows, few enough have been allowed to get out. But I've got all these things in my head, and they won't go away. And every time I see something, I look and I say, you know, wow, I'm responsible for that.
Well, logistically speaking, now these people, they can't leave either, right? Am I wrong about this?
Right, no, they can't leave. I mean,
like, say if 100,000 of them said, you know, shit, the hell with this.
Screw this, I'm going to, yeah.
They can't get out either, right?
Nope, sorry. No.
This is what I'm saying.
It's all Hotel California. You can check out, but you can never leave.
Yeah, that's what gives me the real heebies about this, is this sort of gated in quality about it all. And it's just
Gaza is, for all intents and purposes, Gaza has been transformed into one great big ghetto.
Open air prison,
it is, for all intents and purposes, a giant death camp. Because children can't get away, and I don't, you know, I went through this BS about, I remember storming Norman Schwarzkopf and his videos from the smart bombs in the first Bush War, and look at this, is the luckiest man in Iraq driving across this bridge, and we're about to blow it to smithereens. See how smart our bombs are? And then we find out a couple of years later that, no, the bombs weren't so smart, and we killed a lot of civilians with a lot of bombs. And so when Israel comes out and says, well, you know, we're pinpointing our bombs with precision accuracy thanks to GPS satellites, you know, what is that? Truth is the first casualty of war?
Yeah, no, I mean, that is a joke, especially when you can turn on Al Jazeera and see. I mean, everywhere they show is just rubble. I don't know what to make of those images, you know?
I don't either, except to know that it makes me sick in the pit of my gut, because I know that every American here is paying for it.
Well, I am sort of concerned about how it all is supposed to wind down, you know?
Well, see, I don't think it does. I mean, we can talk about January 20th, but no, I've come over to your way of thinking in the progress of this conversation, Sandra. I don't think it does.
I mean,
I think Israel will act with impunity because they know, among other things, that the preachers in this country have a significant chunk of the population by the short and curlies, and that all they have to do is say, you're hating on Israel, and every preacher will take to the pulpit and say, we're all going to hell. We got to blow up more Gazans. We have to show we love Israel.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't, you know, I really don't know. All I can say is I really hope that I'm wrong, and this time next week or whatever, it's not the... I don't have the same urge to call about the same thing. I mean, you know, how...
Yeah, it would be nice to have a new issue.
Yeah, because I'm...
I didn't even mean Monday night to be Israel night at the movies.
Yeah, well, hopefully you'll get some other calls about something else. And I'll end this with, I see they're going to sit the new Negro in the Senate. That should be fun for him.
Yeah, he should have a real... and, yeah, well, it's still gonna. It's not have done it. You know, we're not to the past tense of that process yet.
Well, homeboy was killing me the way he was introducing himself all over town, too. You know, you got to laugh. I'm like, Jesus Christ. But anyway, listen, I'll let you go.
All right, Sandra, have a wonderful weekend. Have a wonderful week. There we go. See ya.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, and enjoy what remains of your academic vacation.
Yeah, 2 weeks. Okay.
All right, later.
Bye.
Bye. Our pal Sandra in California, and let's just keep things rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, the reverb is up to 10.
Say again?
The reverb is up to 10 after today.
I know.
But really quick, it's my dream. My dream is to be on your show the same night as Sandra. I love her so much.
Oh, isn't she a joy?
Oh, again, it's the delightful imprecations, among other things, besides her brilliant mind, of course. Actually, I don't like to follow somebody like Sandra. That's kind of like following the Beatles. You don't want to do that. I wish she's supposed to follow me.
Yeah, and wasn't Elvis wonderful, ladies and gentlemen?
Oh, man, this is great. Yeah, I might bust out a few curses myself tonight. This is just... it's unbelievable. The Bush Jr. story is less than 8 days, and it just won't go away fast enough.
I know. You know, you ever been to a real live, honest to God opera, Reverbo?
Yeah, probably. My mother was a semi-professional opera singer, so I got a lot of that.
Okay, so you know how it goes at the end, and there's an encore,
mm-hmm.
and there's an encore, and they come out and throw, and everybody throws roses.
Sure.
And then they go away and they come out for another encore, whether you're clapping for one or not. You know, there can be four and five encores that nobody even asked for. This is that.
Yeah, it's great.
And we're not allowed vegetables or shoes.
Well, I don't have anything to say about the press. I mean, yeah, there's like a handful of people just going, you know, they're real tough now, huh? Where were they, you know, for the last 8 years? They're, you know, I just can't believe it. Fetish is a great word, and while I was waiting to get on, I looked up fetish in my Webster's College Dictionary, and it's one of those words that it's great to actually see the definition because it's so crisp and concise. Most people, when they think...
Yeah, now, and bear in mind, I mean it in an academic sense, not in a, you know, whip me, beat me, spank me, make me write bad checks kind of way.
Exactly. Well, I knew that, of course. And that's the first definition of a fetish, is something that has unquestioned reverence and devotion. And you nailed it. That's the way that we think of Israel. There's no question about it.
I mean...
It's unquestioned.
Yeah, not allowed to question. You know, remember, anybody who ever served Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee is an anti-Semite.
I don't know. It's just that card. And I don't want to, you know, let the bad mail come into me, too. I don't care, but I'm going to say this anyway. It's a card that I think is going to be able to be played for all time. And it's too bad because it just... You can't ever have any debate. You can't ever have any critical dissent about it.
No, well, you can't have any intellectual discussion about it. For instance, I think Holocaust deniers are idiotic, evil people. All right, it happened. The photo footage is there. testimonial record is replete and virtually complete. The Germans convicted themselves by virtue of the fact that they are such methodical, nay, even maniacal record keepers, let alone the records of, you know, the Wannsee Conference. So, you know, a Holocaust denier is a malevolent idiot in my book. And probably hides some of it behind some degree of, in fact, the personal racism. And I find it all loathsome. But I also find loathsome the idea that, so, you know, if somebody tries that on me, I've got no tolerance for it. I really don't, because I have to be fact-based, if nothing else, for reasons that I have enunciated at greater length than other programs. But that fact does not... Maybe if I'd been a better logic student at Reverbo, I would have a better handle on how to put this. What's that old line? Universal affirmatives are only partially convertible. Monty Python said it best when they said all of Al McCogan is dead, but only part of the class of dead people are Al McCogan. All mackerel are fish. All trout are fish, but that doesn't mean that all mackerel are trout. You see what I'm saying? Along those lines, if that's making any sense at all, as opposed to just sounding like there was some sort of funny mushrooms on my meatball sub before the show started, what I'm getting at here is that Israel cannot expect to be given a pass to do whatever evil it wishes to do against some other segment of people because evil was done against it. Because if that's the standard by which we measure, you know, my culture that had a genocide practiced against it, something a little over 2,050 years ago, okay? Because I'm basically Celtic. I have no idea who my gods were. I would like to think I would have grown past gods anyway. I have no idea what my music was. I have no idea what my diet was.
Well, then your job is to never forget and to arm yourself and to go find those people, even though they've been dead for 250 years, and destroy all their
That's 2050.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, the possum goddess people.
Right. You know, there are that cache of ancient pot that was found in Mongolia or somewhere a couple of weeks ago. Was part of a culture and a people who were apparently Caucasian white folks in China, and they don't exist anymore. Okay,
oh.
Victims of genocide. We've talked about it before. All you got to do is read the holy book, and you'll find God telling the folks to go and kill every one of them down to the last man, woman, and child, beast of the field, and salt the earth. Well, not salt the earth because they were taking over that ground. But history is replete with it, and I'm one of those crazy people who believes that never again means never again, not just to one segment of humanity, but within all humanity. That it matters in the that never again applies to the Congo. That never again applies to Hutus and Tutsis. That never again applies in Darfur. That never again applies to the Kosovars and Serbs and Croats and the native Russians and Estonians and Ukrainians. That it applies to what is left of the aboriginal population of this side of the planet. And that it's a fundamental rule by which we, what? By which we acknowledge that we have grown as a species.
So can I?
Sorry.
Are you implying, Senator Kincaid, that's a vote for peace?
Yeah.
Nobody here. You're not going to get anywhere with that kind of attitude around here.
Yeah, I know that peace thing just doesn't sell.
It's almost like the world really is a Kurt Vonnegut story or a Star Trek.
We're all just sitting around waiting for somebody to uncork the Ice Nine.
Pretty much. It's just how many dead ones are enough dead ones. And pretty soon it's like no one will be left. There'll be two people left, and one of them will kill the other one. I mean, you just got to wonder, going back to just having any faith in humanity at all.
Do you remember in Cat's Cradle? Was it Cat's Cradle?
A long time ago, but...
The one that's got Ice Nine in it.
That's Cat's Cradle.
Okay. Do you remember the religion in Cat's Cradle?
Yes, the Bakonanism.
Yes, Bakonanism.
Based on a real religion, as I ultimately discovered, or somewhat on one.
I love this stuff. You just sent me off to look it up. To look up some of the tenets of Bakonanism. God never wrote a good play in his life. History. Read it and weep. Today I will be a Bulgarian minister of education. Tomorrow I will be Helen of Troy. Midget, 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 how he struts and winks, for he knows a man's as big as what he hopes and thinks. And this one, well, there's a couple more. Ah, God, what an ugly city every city is. And then finally, the hand that stocks the drugstores rules the world. Let us start our republic with a chain of drugstores, a chain of grocery stores, a chain of gas chambers, and a national game. After that, we can write our constitution.
There you go. That's awesome. It's documentary stuff. This isn't fiction.
No, it's not. And nice, very nice. So many different creatures all on the same device. Isn't that one of them too?
Sounds like one of them. I'm in the process of trying to read everything that the man ever wrote.
I think that would be a good part of anyone's
sure, literary education.
No, human education. That's the whole point. This ain't literature. This is a roadmap to humanity.
I wish he could have been alive to see Obama get elected. He was sure one sad old man when he toward the end of his life. Well, for his whole life, really. He was just so cynical. That's why I liked him so much, I guess. But back to today's little press conference, so we're at the end now, right? And it kind of reminds me of Vince Bugliosi's whole point, just how unrepentant that shithead is, just how unapologetic he is. He just basically says, it's like he just says, hey, I don't know about you, but I had a great time. You know, I had a blast. No WMDs over here.
It's interesting you would bring that up because Bart Kopp at his page today had a link to a wonderful list of reasons for praising George Bush, and it's well worth the read. It's great political humor. It is John Swift, JONSWIFT .blogspot.com. President Bush's legacy, one of our greatest presidents. He says, I've put together my own list of talking points which should convince anyone why George W. Bush belongs on Mount Rushmore along with Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, and the other guy. 1. After Hurricane Katrina, President Bush kept our cities safe. Not a single American city has been destroyed or partially destroyed since Katrina. After the October 2008 stock market correction, there have been no great depressions. After Iraq and Afghanistan took a turn for the worse, President Bush has kept us from losing any wars. After the district attorney firing scandal, the outing of Valerie Plame and other scandals, President Bush restored integrity to government.
Yeah, he did.
After divisive elections, President Bush united our country. You know, in hating him. So, yeah. I know. Yeah, it's all been just one glorious little carnival ride for him. It has been in point of fact, Reverbo, has it not? 8 years of putting more M80s up more frogs' butts. Only thing is, the rest of the world was the frog.
It really has. And that satire you just read by Swift. The crazy thing about that is that could have come from the man's mouth directly. He said more ridiculous things than that himself. Yeah. I can just see him, you know, just discussing his legacy. Well, after those, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, subsequent to those two wars and all those dead people, we haven't had any wars since then, have we?
Right. Because that's all the logic of since 9/11, we haven't been attacked by the terrorists. That means I've been a good anti-terror president.
Yeah, sure.
You know, since the stock market crash of 2008, we haven't had any more stock market crashes. That means he's been an economic genius. There we are with those logical slips of the brain, if you will. You know, one thing not implying the other.
It's just that complete disconnect, and he's just totally unconcerned with the death and destruction that he has left in his wake. And I almost can't even imagine it. I mean, there have been shitty presidents. See, there's Sandra just rubbing off on me. Here they come. It's just going to come flying out here.
Welcome to the inner tubes.
I love it. And I've been voting. My first presidential election was 1972. And, I mean, there's been presidents, you know, in history. I mean, sure, you kind of snore through, right? You kind of play golf through. But not this one. This one, this guy lowered the bar, or raised the bar. I suppose it depends how you look at it. No one's going to touch this guy. And you have to be careful not to. It's so easy to just.
Now, see, don't do that. I mean, you know, the possum goddess punishes hubris, Reverbo. You know she does. Because we've said that before, that, you know, that this guy can't be touched. We thought Ronald Reagan was the absolute nadir of benighted, hateful ignorance. And suddenly, with the benefit of hindsight, as you know, when you're standing next to George W. Bush, Ronald Reagan, I mean, I even catch Democrats going, well, you know, I've gotten a little misty-eyed lately for Reagan.
Oh, God.
And,
oh,
you know,
so
George H. You know, George H.W. Bush, you think, well, you know, that guy was disconnected from reality. I mean, that's the sort of patricianism that you know, will not see that kind again. Oops. And see.
So this is what we have to look forward to then, and this is why it's so much fun talking to you, because I was real happy until I made this phone call. So you're saying
I've done it again, haven't I?
That don't worry, there'll be one uglier and worse than this one somewhere down the road.
George Bush did not have a handle on mean, pig-eyed, and stupid. Okay? Because mean, pig-eyed, and stupid can always be advanced into the White House by whomever has the money to do so. I'm sitting here looking at an email from our pal Kate, who says, and somewhat trenchantly, she's a little bit more, shall we say, pessimistic even than I. She says, as far as, you know, presidents picking up the phones and being told what to do by people from little, tiny, otherwise inconsequential nations, she says, when the phone rings, the prez will do what he's told to do by them. He's been chosen to dance just like everyone since Wilson. This will be interesting to watch. After W, they needed someone to soothe the masses and settle down the natives. That's why Johnny Mac didn't win.
There's a lot of, you know, I suppose you don't have to, I believe.
Tough to gut that one through, isn't it?
You know, they're all tools. You have to be careful. Some of them are indeed incompetent, and some are stupid, but they're all tools to one extent or another, and this one was just the biggest one of all.
Well, let's look at the history of the American presidency real quick, Reverbo, if you don't mind.
I think it would be excellent.
George Washington. You can read various heretical histories that will tell you that George Washington was not the benign man on the dollar bill, that he was entirely too easily manipulated by the likes of Alexander Hamilton, who managed to outsurvive the Washington presidency, and a lot of people were real happy to see Alexander Hamilton out of power. Alexander Hamilton screwed up the Adams presidency and turned John Adams into our first one-term president. Washington tried to be benign about it, and he really did respect the form of government that they had created insofar as he believed he had some power, and Congress had some power, and the courts had some power that they hadn't expounded upon yet. And so you get that. Adams, smart guy, kind of earthier, if you will, than the Virginia planter elite with whom he was running. The Alien and Sedition Acts are a black mark, a blot on our history. Jefferson delivered jeremiads against the abuse of power by the federal government, but the minute he got some in his hands, hey, look, everybody, I bought us continent. Even though I don't say I can do that in the Constitution. Cool, ain't I? Okay? And you go from him through Madison, through Monroe. There's a new biography out of Andrew Jackson that I want to read that I find that I think will be interesting. I got real problems with the genocidal instincts of Andrew Jackson. But, you know, you got to get up to James K. Polk before you get to one that you can put on the same page with George W. Bush. And you can put James K. Polk on the same page with George W. Bush because the motivations behind the Iraq War and occupation and the motivations behind the attack on Mexico in the Polk administration are almost identical. With the motives, as opposed to the object of the motives, shall we say?
Now, when was James Polk president?
1840s, because Abraham Lincoln made his first political mark on the nation's history by inveighing against Polk's illegal war against Mexico. So it's whenever the Mexican War was, I'm displaying my ignorance again, 1843-ish, seems like. Somebody can correct me, and trust me, they will. So then you've got to go past Polk. James Buchanan, it's arguable that you can argue that the Civil War could have been avoided had James Buchanan simply wanted to be the President of the United States. But he, not so much. Then you get to Ulysses Grant. And Ulysses Grant was handed the presidency as a sort of sinecure for his service to the nation. And, you know, if there is, Mark Twain used to say that if there was something to be said of Mark Twain as an act of pure decency, it was his publication of Grant's memoirs, which Grant literally sat being eaten alive by cancer on the front porch of his home, handwriting these memoirs to be published by subscription. And that was because even Grant by that time had been pillaged by the cronies that he had turned loose on the people of the United States via the, at that time, single most corrupt administration in American history. And then after Grant, you go through that series of really forgettable presidents all the way up to McKinley. And that's what George Bush is facing, really. We haven't gotten to the 20th century yet. But that's what George Bush is facing. He said he's worried about a negative view of history. But the fact of the matter is, a century hence, if there's still a United States by then, in the a century hence analysis, it could very well be that George Bush will not be loathed by history. He will simply be, and I think this probably is more likely to keep him up nights than anything else, he and his father will both simply be forgotten. You know, just like I'm sitting here and I can't tell you if Grover Cleveland came before Chester A. Arthur and it was Garfield and none of that. Garfield got shot. I know that. And then, you know, McKinley, we only know McKinley because of the Spanish-American War and because it was him shuffling off this mortal coil that gave us Theodore Roosevelt.
Right.
Who has been, in many ways, lauded beyond his deserts.
He's been recently sort of getting kind of popular, and people have been propping him up somewhat.
Well, and even back then, he said, walk softly and carry a big stick. Well, what that meant was building the United States Navy into a world power and sending it around, sending it out and about, shoving around little American attempts at democracy in countries that didn't speak English, you know, in Central and South America, of which Smedley Butler was incidentally, apart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And later, you know, sort of busted with the company and told on it. But then, you know, you come up through history, and then you hit Warren Gamaliel Harding, Reverbo. Warren,
the one that they like to pair with George Jr. the most.
Right. And I would say of the three, or I would say of all of these, you can put George Bush, Warren Gamaliel Harding, and James K. Polk all on the same page. Warren Gamaliel Harding was a newspaper editor from Ohio who didn't want the job, just like George W. Bush was a minority shareholder in a baseball team who didn't want the job. The only thing is, Warren Gamaliel Harding had the common decency to drop dead in office, but not before he had fathered a bastard child literally in the coat closet of the White House.
Awesome.
Yeah, he was succeeded by Calvin Coolidge, and it was Calvin Coolidge and Herbert Hoover, you know, implementing the Harding presidency that led to the rampant excesses that, wow, look, everybody, the stock market just crashed. Look at all the smoke and rubble. And then you go through the FDR and Harry Truman.
Here come the peace and prosperity years till 1980, till Reagan.
Well, yeah, with the exception of the interlude of the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam, and you know, we had a string of pretty damn good luck with presidents, from FDR through Truman, through admittedly Eisenhower, who, you know, had typical Republican policies, but also presided over a peacetime expansion of the economy that would not be seen again until Clinton, the heartbreak of John Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, who had the misfortune of having to deal with one of the great shames of this nation at the same time as trying to transform this nation along the same lines of as FDR, and that cost him some of that ability. Then you get Nixon, and even Nixon, by comparison to George W. Or George W.'s daddy, or Ronald Reagan. Nixon, do you understand Nixon, as loathsome and hateful as he was, do you understand that Nixon would have been run out of the Republican Party, the modern Republican Party? I'm not kidding. He would have.
He's too progressive for them?
Absolutely. I mean, Nixon remains the only president of the United States who has ever proposed that every citizen of this country be afforded a living, not a minimum, but a living wage.
Amazing.
It's just true. That doesn't take away the fact that he was a sack of, that he was 10 pounds of poop in a 5-pound onion bag, but he did do that. It was the Nixon administration that created the Department of Environmental Protection. Just was.
Do you ever wonder if they're just throwing us bones to distract us from their covert shenanigans, though?
Well, there were plenty. Now, yeah, all during this time, there were plenty of those covert shenanigans that go back, frankly, to you know, that era really begins in earnest when Truman leaves and Eisenhower enters.
In many ways, had George Jr. thrown us a couple of bones, we wouldn't have just been just left out in the cold. We wouldn't have just focused after a while. All our hate.
Well, remember, there was supposed to have been a bone. No Child's Behind Left was supposed to be the bone we were thrown.
Well, yeah.
But because it was unfundable,
right,
it didn't work. And because everything else he did with such a ham fist.
Well, the bone, I mean, is the peace and prosperity bone. If I, you know, you know that they're flipping people LSD and pushing them off roofs, but if I can afford to send my kid to college, I just don't pay that much attention to it. I mean,
yeah, because then you've done the American generational thing where, well, you know, I've given my kid a better chance in life than I had myself, and you know, I'm done.
Yeah.
And that and for a lot of people, you know, it took a long time, Reverbo, for people to peel those Bush Cheney stickers off their cars and realize that they had been had. It took a long time. There were a lot of us who were in the damn wilderness when shock and awe started, who said, you know, this is sick. I started going back on the air in May of 2003, subbing for our good friend Dr. Bill O'Brien, when he would need to be away from the microphone. And I was called everything but an American. I mean, I was Bob Al-Kincaida. I was Baghdad Bob. For simply pointing out to Wingnut Southern West Virginia that they might be smelling some rose water now, but pretty soon that would dry up and it would still smell like poop. So, you know, there was a long time in the wilderness getting people. There was a time when folks like you and me and the other listeners to the Horn, that, you know, we were in a minority of 5 and 10%.
Oh, yeah.
You know, George, it must be born, and maybe that's what we spend this last week on. It must be born in memory that at the time that the Twin Towers came down, that hateful, ignorant, little pig-eyed, jug-eared freak had an approval rating of 92%. 92%. That means that you and me and others were alone and widely separated in a minority of 8%. You know, and that gave rise to that great photograph of the idiot in the cardinal shirt with the do-rag on his head, and he's holding up the poster board sign that says get a brain, morons. That's when that was. That's when Clear Channel was out there burning the Dixie Chicks albums. That's when Saxby Chambliss was morphing the face of a man who left three or four limbs on the ground in Vietnam, morphing his face into that of Osama bin Laden. And that man, Saxby Chambliss, sits in the Senate of the United States to this day. I'm sorry. I'm so far up my soapbox. I ought to just, like, I apologize. I didn't.
You saved me. You know, you're better at it than I am. I'm sitting here thinking, so how did this guy get, how does he get reelected? Because the wheels start coming off before. Don't they start coming off before 2004? The first time he gets elected on the national security ticket, and the second time, other than the fact that John Kerry was sort of dull and he didn't see a spine on him. Well, I can't even remember now. What was the big issue in 2004?
Well, see, that the reason you can't remember it, Reverbo, is because the big issue had to be created because we ran in opposition to George Bush, but nobody was quite sure on what we were running. It was because a man named Dennis Kucinich entered the race and actively started talking about health care and about labor and about the fact that the war would fail. That all of a sudden John Kerry began to talk about the fact that not having health care in this great nation is positively Orwellian. That's when that happened. John Edwards began to care about poor people after Dennis Kucinich got the rest of the Democratic field to notice that poor people existed. And they co-opted, and that's what happens in American politics. It's that whole Overton window thing where issues go from being absolutely crazy to tolerable to mainstream. And we made a lot, and Dennis Kucinich pushed a lot of that in that direction. I mean, we were talking about history a little bit ago. Give history 100 years, and Dennis Kucinich is going to seem like a visionary, because he is.
Just like Ross Perot.
In a way, yeah.
Well, Perot predicted all this economic stuff. Well, now I'm starting to think back on this, and what happens is if they get it, if it's close enough, of course, then you can steal it. If
right.
It's close enough, you can maneuver it and manipulate it. Because, I mean, you can't, you know, George Bush, you can stand there like they all do and talk about mandates. I mean, this guy barely won. I mean, it was like electing Elmer Fudd. I mean.
Well, and see, that's the thing that some of us still remember about John Kerry. John Edwards was absolutely running around the room with his head on fire, knowing what had happened in Ohio, when John Kerry, with $45 million in his war chest, left the field and a month later was having Christmas dinner in Sun Valley with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I remember that, and I remember being offended by that. I remember being hurt by that. I remember being sublimely pissed off by that because, you know, I was behind the microphone when the Arnold was at the convention in New York City saying, "And I tell you now, my fellow Republicans, don't be an economic girly man like John Kerry." And John Kerry sits down to dinner with that POS? Excuse me? But, you know, that's me and I'm crazy.
Hey, guess what Ken Blackwell's doing?
Running for head of the Republican National Committee.
You got it, man. And, well, it's going to be a close race between him and, let's see who else we have. And we have Chip Salzman.
Yeah, the Barack the Magic Negro, the Christmas gift disc guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's running too, and I looked at the field, and I really didn't see too many moderate thinkers in the field. There's some sort of boring ones, a couple, but it looks like it's going to be really no update of ideas for them. Just going to be just running down the same stupid road, and wondering why they're not going to ever get elected to the White House for 50 years.
Well, you know, Eisenhower, in that letter to his maiden aunt or his cousin or something back in the 50s, said that any political party who attempted to destroy Social Security would cease to become a national party. And, you know, he didn't have any caveats in there as to how long that would take. But look, turns out Eisenhower was a prophet. Because as of November 2008, the Republican Party is no longer a national party.
It's not. It's geographically marginalized. And again, you just have to hand it to them. They're staring at it, and they simply... I mean, I heard today that they want to... they're all getting together, you know, and they're presenting their credentials for this to succeed old Mike Duncan. And no, they're not really... they don't want to really get with the times, but they decided they want to get cool, and they're going to have some pages on Facebook, you know, and Twitter and the internet and stuff. So they're going to like.
Well, hey, Israel's on Twitter. Did you know that? The whole invasion of Gaza has been on Twitter.
Oh God.
What are you doing right now? Slaughtering civilians?
Oh, gee. I think with that I'll let you go. Yeah, what are you doing now? That's Facebook.
What are you doing right now? Rounding up civilians and putting them into another building that we're going to bomb. Ha!
Yeah, what are we doing now on the RNC committee page? Hey, we're going to elect another Christian right-wing darling.
But he may be black, in which case we'll claim inclusion.
Oh, God.
Make it personal, Reverbo.
I can't let you go before I tell you this. I'm glad you said that. So I went to Rite Aid Pharmacy. I don't know if this is a reason to keep shopping there or to just shun them. But I looked on their receipt, and it says Rite Aid Pharmacy. With us, it's personal. And I thought, oh, Jesus, God. Yeah, and I'm a guest. I feel like a real guest at Target. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Lord. All right. Well, take it easy. Talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Reverbo. Make it personal.
Yeah, same to you.
Later, brother. Reverbo, calling from the home of the Possum Goddess. The inner sanctum of the Possum Goddess. Reverbo is, after all, high priest of the Possum Goddess. And not only that, the Horn's critic at large. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Let's keep it personal. Who do you think you are? How dare you? How dare you? Try to pretend like you could give us some perspective on Israel. That's what Joe the Plunger's for.
Oh, God, I haven't even gotten to that sound, have I?
I'm glad you saved everything because you guys touched on everything else.
No, because I haven't gotten to Bush's final ruminations on Katrina either. That's kind of tough to get through. May have to save that one for tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah, I read that and my brain went and blue screened.
Your brain has experienced a conflict and needs to shut down. We're sorry for this inconvenience.
Would you like to connect to the internet to see how to fix this problem?
Oh, God, ain't it the truth?
To this problem, please call 1-800 blah blah blah. Our Microsoft representatives will help you for whatever.
Were these solutions helpful to you? Yes? No? Why?
Oh my God! You know, it's.
Oh, by the way, our buddy Maura just chimed in. This is good. As far as the RNC chairman is concerned, she says, I do find it interesting that 50% of the black Republicans are running for the chairmanship of the Republican Party.
Yeah, that's funny, because when I heard them, like, two black men are running for that, I'm like, who? That Ken Blackwell scumbag from Ohio that flipped the votes and did all that voting.
Crap. Yeah, why isn't he indicted?
Yeah, oh, well, same reason.
Yeah, I know. I shouldn't even say.
Yeah, don't get. Yeah, come on, Bob. Oh my God, do we need a flush or what?
Do you have any idea the impact you've had on this network? I just Nick in the chat room, our buddy Nick, just types in, brought to you by Carl's Jr.
And that's what it's getting. It's going to be like that.
Well, did you see? I thought of you the other day. I don't know if new listeners to the network understand that I'm not being insincere or trying to blow smoke up anybody's butt. I'm not. I think of the people who share their time here, because I saw this article the other day saying, no, it wasn't an article. I was listening to National Petroleum Radio.
Mm.
And I heard this this little mini story by one of the, I think it was Scott Simon, who was talking about the fact that The chairman of BlackBerry recently announced that if only Barack Obama could be paid, his recent mentions of BlackBerry devices and how it would have to be pried from his hands would be worth at least a $25 million endorsement. Is it possible that the commander-in-chief could also be the pitchman-in-chief? Join us Saturday on National Public Radio and we'll, you know. And boom.
Oh, I just had to, oh.
You know, and I'm going down the road to keep it on the pavement, Bob. And what's the first thing that goes through my head? Brought to you by Carl Jr.
I know I sent the vial of LSD to the RNC voting conference thing, and maybe I got some on my hands because I was just seriously.
Walls breathing again? Yeah.
I wasn't even there. I was at the bench listening to the. I mean, I wasn't. I'm not here on the phone. I'm listening to this come off my radio. That was wonderful, Bob. That was as good as the walk down the dirty laundry lane there of our president. You should have a show where you just do that, you know, because there's like there are so many forgotten scoundrels that. Man, there just might be one little nugget of kernel.
Well, yeah, I mean, back up. I mean, I didn't even really hesitate over Bill Monroe, or James Monroe. Bill Monroe was a hell of a good, never mind. James Monroe, the guy who enunciated the Monroe Doctrine that said, none of the rest of you are going to screw with these little countries around here. We're going to be the single dispensers of misery in this hemisphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, think of what that sets up. You know, and this is another thing, when Roberto was talking and cursed us with nobody could be worse than Bush, you know, Obama could be worse than Bush. I just got to say it.
It
has to be said.
No. No.
It's out. It has to be done because... This is what we're talking about on election night. This is what we're talking about 6 months beforehand, and 6 months before that, and 6 months, and 6 months, and 6 months. And I remember, because I remember being an 8%er. I was in the wilderness. We were in the weeds together. I remember sitting on the online listening to the most disappointing 2004, you know, thinking that on 2004 on election night that, my God, this horrible nightmare of that lasted 8 years is only going to last 4. All right, at least it's not 8. We can make him a one term. Oh, we can, you know, get this battle out. And you said a few things that's kind of just, just tweaks my. You're giving these people a defibrillator machine. You're poking the instead of that pen stabbing in their eye, and you push through all the way and give them a lobotomy. You're putting it in their throat, and you're going to give them a trach. You can't sit here. I mean, listen to what did you hear? What these people were talking about at the RNC conference. Did you hear what they were saying? The questions that they were getting asked. There is no thought there. There is no anything else. They're going right back to basics. How many guns do you own? I mean, they're going to get so down and dirty. And they're going to get so that in Obama, who won't say anything, you don't want to step on any toes. Oh, he gave the body language to the President Bush, very dismissal with that pat on the shoulder. And I'm supposed to get an erection over this. We got 1,000 people dead. Okay, murdered, shot in a barrel. Nah, he's not going to say anything. He's not going to do anything like that. Made too many promises, too many people put money in his pocket. And you know what? I hate to be like this, but from everything that I've seen him do so far, I do like his energy policy, don't get me wrong. But on everything else I've seen him kind of do, all the nominations and all the cabinet appointees and everything else.
Oh, come on. Hilda Solis. You got to give him Hilda Solis. Labor.
Is that? Yeah, I know. No, okay, labor. All right, which is in some light. It reminds me of the West Wing when they stuck their Republican down on level 20 in with the steam and boiler and everything else like that. That's where she's going. I mean, I hope she's more incorporated than that. I hope that they utilize all these people to their finest abilities, and that their negative little demons that exist in them don't come out. But let's not forget something very important, very, very important. We still have Harry Reid, who is a freaking joke. We got Pelosi, who, man, I love her hair. Oh, you look great. Oh, you look fantastic.
Roar marvelous.
Yeah. But we still have a murderer. We got a guy. I mean, his bloody footprints, we're going to be able to follow them out of the White House for a very long time. And I hope somebody, and I know somebody will, and eventually we'll know so much of his story. I mean, you put him in, he's in a whole other realm. You're correct on it. I mean, Polk, who's Polk? Polk, what is a Polk? I don't even know what a Polk is. It's a cheap speaker. I mean, when we sit here and think about...
Oh, they used to be good. Now quit it.
They did, but now, that's what happens. See, they get too big, they get too excessive, and they sit there and they think that they're this, and they can become a mass murderer. Then they, it's like, one thing I always got to mention about the Israeli thing, and the thing that just makes me do cartwheels and backflips and front flips and side flips is every time I look at this country, okay, every time I look at this country, forget about the crazy religions, yep, they're crazy, they're all crazy. My religion's crazy, but at least I don't talk to walls. But anyway, when we sit here and look at this, and, I have a religion of life. That's my religion, just life in general. The universal religion of life from with the nose and the handkerchief and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway,
right.
From Adam. But no, when we sit here and look at it, I see nothing other than the abused kid that, had to go to school in dirty, ripped up sweatpants being the bully. Because his dad beats him up, and his sister beats him up, and everybody beat him up, and that's how I see Israel. I see Israel as like the proverbial bully, and it's
got beaten up, ain't gonna get beat up no more, and gonna lay the beat down on some other people, and get it and get some vicarious satisfaction.
Yeah, they're like a chicken hawk. That's what they're like. They're like the little chicken hawk.
I'm a rootin' tootin' chicken hawk.
Yep, I'm going to get you. You got a problem with me, I'm going to eat me a chicken. And it's like,
That was tonight's obligatory Warner Brothers cartoon reference, for those of you scoring at home.
I'm serious when we sit here and look at this situation. And that's the whole thing. I just got to ask him. I was wondering when Joe Wurzel Schmucker or whatever his name is.
Oh, you mean Samuel Wurzel Booker Beckerbacher?
Yeah, and I know he's probably done it. We just haven't seen the film clip yet. You know he's going to say, hey, when do we really deal with these Arabs? When are we just going to do it and get rid of them? Come on, you know it's got to be done. It's got to be done. You got to kill them all. And I'm sorry. It was my fault for the genocide of the Celts. I was playing Rome Total War, and your people just wouldn't stop bugging mine. And they had
worshiping in the sacred grove and burying people in leather caps and peat bogs. I understand.
Yeah, I had to, no, well, I had to change them to my religion and all that stuff. But that's the honest-to-God question.
The Romans, you're right, the Romans wiped out my people.
Mm-hmm.
Because, remember, for those paying attention, thank God, you know, that's the nice thing. I know that people do, like, pay attention to these conversations. The Celtic culture extended from north of modern Turkey,
mm-hmm.
Balkans, east of the Balkans,
yep.
to the British Isles, to the Iberian Peninsula.
Yep.
Rubbed out.
Yep.
So that we become a remnant people. The last Celtic peoples on Earth are, to a certain extent, the Scots. The Irish got interbred by the Vikings. The Welsh held out pretty hard. The Bretons on the clinging to the coast of France, and the Basques in the northern Iberian Peninsula, and that's it.
All terrorists, too, if you notice.
Well, howdy-do, I did. Yeah. And just, you know, rubbed out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not... Well, never mind, but, yeah. But by the same token, I don't feel an urge to waste an enclave of Italians in Cleveland. I'm an American, damn it. I'm not a Celt. You know, there's two or three drops of Native American in me. Indian.
Yep.
First mm-hmm. peoples.
That's right.
But you know what? I don't want to go burn down Fort Carson, Colorado. And I don't understand.
I kind of do. I want a time machine for that, but that's just me. But go ahead. That's my own world. My own holodeck adventure.
Yeah, I know.
But
there's good news. Right. The Deneb processor came out this weekend.
That thing is sick. See, I told you, and I knew I should have waited, and I didn't. See, that's why I'm bad at gambling. That's why every time I play the Poker Stars, and I do anything like that, I know. It's like, all right, King of the Nine, oh, that's good, oh, I'll get that, you know. Nothing, you know, I can't get nothing, I can't get a straight, I get nothing, you know, nothing. It doesn't matter what it is, but if I put them down, it goes out. Same thing, I bought the Phenom 1, and I knew I was waiting for the Neve, and I know, I'm like, The nice thing is my motherboard can adapt, so I'm not, and it's pretty cheap, too. And it's overclocking a 4 on air. It's pretty impressive. Impressive stuff. But we're going to need impressive stuff if we're going to really meet the demands and the challenges that lie ahead of us. I mean, I really hope. I really, 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 really do hope. And I that's why I said I don't know if Obama realizes how much hope that is built on him. And, you know, while the people like you and... I'm going to put myself there. I'm an 8%er. I hated that bastard. Being stoned after 9/11 was one of the...
Oh, no. Albert? Okay, I got a feeling we'll get Albert back. But I don't... It all goes back, doesn't it? And this is where I was going with Albert. It goes back to a recognition... that race is a human construct. Tribes are a human construct. Clans are a human construct. The only thing that's not a human construct is the common humanity of humankind. Does that make any sense? I mean, do you see what I'm getting at? You can literally tell more about genetic similarities among individuals based upon the chemical content of their earwax than you can by their religion or their culture or their skin color. Seriously, I'm not kidding. And that's what makes this stuff what's going on the Levant. That's what makes me absolutely crazy. Is that you, Albert?
Yeah, what was that?
I got one beep and it was gone. I don't know. Maybe the intel people, the Core i7 people, didn't want us talking about Deneb.
Fanboys.
I know.
But I was saying about basically how we're going to need, we're going to need to have technology that is impressive to get to the deal, and basically have along the lines of, I just don't want people to forget. I know he's a patron saint nowadays and stuff, but one of the things that made me cringe and flip out, and I understand there's really not a big pool. It would have been nice if we would have picked new people, but is all the Clinton appointees. I mean, not for nothing. The Clinton years were not as good as everybody thinks they were. Okay? They weren't. No way, hang on. They weren't. Because those people that are the people that were the 8%ers had a lot of problems in those days. I mean, they made up the big majority, the big bulk. Yeah, sure, everybody had money in their pocket. But, a prostitute has money in her pocket, too. It just belongs to the pimp. And, when the pimp comes and wants to sit there and get his money, the pimp gets his money, right? I mean, that's one of the beautiful things about
it. Well, the love of a pimp is different from the love of a square.
And that's something that people got to get with it, all right? And that's serious. An upgrade don't care. He's going to come.
Upgrade's going to get his money.
He's going to get it. He'll make 15,000 children, all named Upgrade.
Two Ds.
To get his money in the future. And this is the thing that I think we really need to seriously grasp. This is why I think you need a show. You really do. And I know there's probably a few of them, but you need a historical show. You need to go through the dirty laundry of each and every single president.
You know who's really, really good at that, and I think we're going to start hearing some of that? I'm not telling tales out of school, but we're working on making it happen. You know who's really, really good at that is Dr. Bill O'Brien. I mean,
I've heard him. I like him.
Dr. Bill knows what color of knows what brand of boot wax James Madison used. I'm not kidding. The knowledge goes that deep.
Nice.
And we're working on some computer problems over at Shea Bill, and as soon as we've got those cleared up, I think he'll start pre-recording some stuff because they're. That's the thing. That's the thing with us liberals. There are few enough of us, and I'm not trying to be egotistical here, Albert. There are few enough of us who can do this as it is, for a variety of reasons, not all of which are talent. There are few enough of us enough as it is, but the subset of individuals willing to pay us to do it is even smaller. So that Joe Vecchio did a marvelous job, but, he gets to the point where he's on the verge of having to go hang out under the bridge with the boys who drink the screw top wine, and he can't do it anymore. And, Dr. Bill is similar, but in a vastly different way. He's busy running a university, and everything that he does right, they look at him and say, "You did that great. Here, do this too." And so being able to do a live show sort of went by the wayside. But for anybody who wants to, I highly encourage them to go back to the archives at whiterosesociety.org and just listen to Dr. Bill O'Brien. He will blow your doors off. He doesn't scream. He doesn't rant. He doesn't rave. He doesn't holler. He is as reserved a human being and as kind a human being on the air as you are ever likely to hear, and you will hang on every word. I've got a clip somewhere on this main production machine of the day that he explained, and he did so hesitantly, explained about how it was that he came to be able to finish college and go on and work toward his PhD. And by the way, dear old Wisconsin, Albert. He grew up in Boston. And, bless his heart, he's been away from Boston for a long time. But it's delightful to talk to him because every now and then some of that Boston sneaks out, what was that accent? It certainly wasn't Boston. But Boston, a little bit of that Southie thing going on. But anyway.
I was thinking Pikey from Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Snatch.
Right. But him telling the story of how he wound up being able to go to college his sophomore year, and how and the relationship between that and what Hamas and Hezbollah do for the people in those benighted territories are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting here producing that day, and it just went right in the head. You know, just whoa. Mm-hmm. Because you're not, that's the punch you don't see coming. And I just, wow, the lights went on. They haven't gone on. And Dr. Bill's been turning lights on for me, for 5 years now. But that's his show is certainly worth going back and going through. But I wanted to, you talked about the hopes that we have pinned on Barack Obama. We're friends. And I want to go into something here, and I hope you will be tolerant of me doing it, because this is not an appeal. This is not any sort of a pity party. I say it candidly in a conversation with you, because I think you'll get it. We have pinned a lot of hopes for a better America on Barack Obama, Albert, we have. But, you know, in the last week, and I'm not going to dwell on this, in the last week, I lost my second oldest sister. She would have been 63 in May.
My condolences.
Well, thank you. It was, as I have said, a strained relationship, but I loved her because she was my sister. Once upon a time, there were seven of us in our little family. We're down to three now. And that is, in its way, when you stop to think about it, daunting in its own right. But she got up, I guess, Wednesday morning. Or maybe it was Thursday. I think it was Thursday morning. Yes, it was the 8th. She got up Thursday morning and told her husband that she wasn't feeling good, and would he go get her a wet wash rag. And he did. And then she said, I think I'm going to get in the tub. And she collapsed in the tub, and he picked her up and carried her to the bed, and when he went to put the wash rag back on her forehead, she was gone. And he did CPR on her for about a half an hour until the paramedics made the five-mile trip to where she lived. And they took her to the hospital, got her briefly revived, and then she was gone. They called the funeral home. The funeral home came and got her and put her in cold storage, and then told the family how much it would take to cremate her. And none of her immediate family, nor I, had the ability to make that payment. And over the course of the weekend, another of my sisters said, I'm going to take care of it, and did. And that's all kind of my point, Albert. And I'm not trying to be a downer here.
No. Reality.
My sister was one of those people that conservatives despise, because she had outlived her usefulness in a capital-intensive system. She had outlived her health. She had outlived her employability, because, by God, in her younger years, she was always there. Whether it was making frozen treats at Dairy Queen or waiting tables at a little Mexican restaurant across the river or making little ceramic doodads that she could sell for extra money and or give away. Somewhere around here I have a pair of hand-painted ladybugs that she cast and painted just for me for my birthday once. She worked in sewing factories. Because being the Deep South, Albert, when all the textile plants unionized in the North, the owners said, well, "We know how to fix this. We'll go down South. They know what slavery's all about. Even though they'll impose it, even though it's still illegal."
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
That's
yeah. Great. Ain't gonna have to worry about no unions down there.
Mm.
And she made T-shirts, and she sewed blue jeans. And she worked until she couldn't work anymore some several years back. And no matter who she had worked for, there was no agenda in this country to make sure that she could go to the doctor when she was sick. And Agnes has sat at the kitchen table at my father's home in Alabama and told her, we have got to get you to the doctor. And this was 10 years ago and more. I can't go to the doctor. I ain't got no money. And so she didn't. And so, a few days ago, she dropped dead. And once she dropped dead, there was yet another lesson to be learned. And that not only is America a really, really hard place to be poor, in some ways it is a harder place to be dead. Because I talked to the guy at the mortuary, and I said, you know, are there no social service agencies? Is there no one who will help with this fee? No. We got billions to send away in foreign aid, but we ain't got nothing to help people give their loved ones a decent send off.
Yeah.
And it was true.
Yeah,
don't die broke in America.
Mm-mm.
Don't live poor in America, because no matter how hard you've worked through your life, you are only as good as the last 8 hours you put in for shit wages.
Yeah. What was that about, a death tax?
Yeah. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to. God forbid some conservative ever uses that phrase on me again. And, you know, I was in the local drugstore today, and I saw the pharmacist who told me that every American has more than adequate health care because no one's ever turned away from an emergency room. And I saw him, and I thought about getting up in his face and straightening him out. But I figured I would probably get really, really irrational if I did it, and I'd probably best not. But
yeah,
God
but,
forbid
know.
A Republican ever tells me about the precious death tax or you know, how hard life is for Paris Hilton or suggest to me that anybody can have care at an emergency room, because you know what? I ain't gonna play that no more.
Yeah, right.
And you know, I hope you don't think, I didn't mean to do this on your dime.
Oh, no.
But it damned well had to be said. You know, we want to talk about the hopes that we put in Barack Obama. You know, I hope that he'll exert some pressure to stop this misery in Gaza. I hope that he'll try to rein in the excesses of our betters, you know, the upper class.
Yeah.
But you know what I hope? I hope that a 62-year-old woman sitting in an easy chair somewhere who feels death coming isn't going to have as her last thought, how on earth will they dispose of my remains?
Hmm. How will my family pay for it? You know, I mean, that's one, that's just a real nutcracker to me, to hear something like, you know, like, you can't afford to go to the emergency room. Because you can't afford it, you know. Yeah, you might not get turned away, but, you know, here's your $40,000 debt, you know, for your whatever they try to, they're going to do angioplasty or something like that, you know. So
And see, I know, Albert, that I'm like so many people in this audience. I don't have any health care. My medicines ran out a few days ago, and, you know, Bob ain't buying no new medicine. Because, frankly, Bob is not worth it to America. And it's not just Bob, and it's not just Bob's sister. It is 47 million Americans who aren't worth it to America.
Mm-hmm.
And won't that just about gag a turkey buzzard?
tell you what. I'll tell you what, brother. I was one of those back when it was probably less than 47. It's probably going to be far, far higher than that. And, you know, you know how I have the evangelical side of to my in-law complex. Well, I was over there this past year, and this is, you know, still trying to nurse this sore tooth, which, you know, I have to get the dentist. You know, you can die from a tooth infection. So, you know, I got to get something done, and, you know, well, here comes another $1,500 plus deductible, at least, I think, what it is in the dental. It's ridiculous. But anyway, you know, we're talking about death debt or this, and this, and this, and this, and health care. You know, you try to discuss this with these people who work with very, 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 very right-wing, religious, Christian fundamentalist, dominionist type of place, and, you know, in terms of a bow company out here in Wisconsin, and they just happen to pay roughly, I mean, you know, honestly, not for nothing, the company takes care of their employees, and they pay $26 per paycheck for full coverage with no benefits, and then they do that, that flex pay thing, and they know all these things, they tell us all this stuff, and I'm like, wait a minute, though, you pay what for your health insurance? They got three kids, I'm pregnant, boom, 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 you know, I'm like, you pay what? $26. You pay what? $26. Oh, and you're against unions, or you're against this, and you're against that, and you're against, I mean, you know, you may pay that. However, my family pays $300 per paycheck, or whatever it is. I'm not even really positive about exactly what it is. You know, and that's, the only reason we have that is with the children got to get it, you know, and daddy has to have it because who's going to take care of them? You know, and, you know, in terms of insurance, you know, insurance is a tax unto itself. Because it's, I mean, you know, and it's a tax on top of a tax, because they tax you first, and then they tax you with that, and then on top of going and using it, you have to sit there and go, well, when, I mean, even having insurance, Bob, what I'm trying to tell you is I actually think it's a little bit harder to have the insurance and pay for it, because it's more money coming out of your pocket that you really can't afford to let go.
Oh, I understand that completely. You know, there are as many horror stories coming from health-insured America as come from uninsured America. Lord God, a little girl died, a 17-year-old girl died in California waiting for a liver transplant that would have worked.
Yeah.
Because of a bean counter at what, Aetna in Philadelphia? Because of some bean counter, some little Eichmann in an office tower somewhere who said, we don't pay, because he knew that his damn Christmas bonus was hinging on whether or not he screwed a 17-year-old. And we noble nation, we pretend that we actually protect children from child predators. I say bullshit.
Hell yeah. Please. They always have that reaction. They create a problem. They get us to react, and then they give us a solution. You know, not to be too Ikean on you, but come on. I mean, that's fundamental basics right here. This is peanut butter and jelly, two pieces of bread, peanut butter and jelly. Put them together, and that's a sandwich. I mean, that's fundamental, elementary. This is to sit there and look at this, and we'll protect the profits at all costs. The profits that are all. Can you say it with me? I don't know. Maybe I can get an amen or an amen ra or something ridiculous like that. We do this, and it's all an illusion anyway. You know, we sit here and waste our time and energy and resources, and, you know, and meanwhile, I mean, we all know what we have to do. We all know what needs to be done. I mean, has to. It's imperative that it has to get done. You know, if we don't get it done, we're going to be extinct. We're going to be extinct. So
right, because in the interim of what between your first call and this call, I mentioned the fact that I persist in this really ludicrous notion that humanity has no chance, ultimately, long term, no chance until we stop taxonomically segregating ourselves. And admit that there is nothing but a human race.
Yeah, no doubt. There's no, you know, I mean, and that's the dichotomy of what's going on right now in Israel. I mean, you know, when you break it down, the genetic Jews that are Semitic or share that title with their Palestinian brothers. That whole Arab thing, they're all one people over there. The Semitic people stretch from Morocco to the borders of Iran.
Because whether it is Arabic or Aramaic or Hebrew or that whole language family, you know, you and I come from peoples whose language family tree is Indo-European, right?
Pretty much, yeah. You and I share a lot of the same.
Yeah. Well, whether you're a Palestinian or an Arab or a Jew or an Aramean or a Samaritan or a Syrian or however else one taxonomically categorizes oneself, the language group is all Nilo-Saharan. Okay? That goes all the way back to the dawn of time when the Sahara was a vast grassland and little people were running around with, remember the end of the Republicans with Bill Hicks? You know, the Republican elephant is dead. Well, it was the same thing with cattle. These big lumbering beasts with huge horns that were, but they tasted good, and they chased them with spears and rocks and did all the way across the Sahara grassland. Climate change, anyone? until they wound up in the most hellish place on earth. And all the while, no matter how many tribes, how many clans, how many nations, how many states they segregate themselves into, because this is all self-segregation, no matter how many times they do that, they remain human beings.
Right.
But only in probably the last 50 years have we begun to reject the taxonomy. You know, I attended that Dismantling Racism workshop sponsored by Coal River Mountain Watch a few weeks back, and I learned a lot about where the damn words come from. Color, white, black, all of these things. We tend to think that they have been with us historically, from the early, but they're not. They don't exist in languages outside the European taxonomical structure. Great Britain, ruling the world, invented most of this stuff.
Yep.
Great Britain, incidentally, also invented the Balfour Declaration.
I understand.
0-2!
You know, you pulled it right out. You sucked it.
Yeah.
No, there's more than that they've done, but yeah. Yeah. No, exactly. That's how you rule it. That's how you rule an area. I mean, that's how you subjugate people, divide and conquer. Same thing with the Republicans and the Democrats. And I know you're a Democrat and everything else like that, and you know I'm a liberal, and I know you're a liberal, actually, I should say, and I mean, when are we going to wake up to the Harry Reids? I mean, to sit there and, you know, man, you know what? Give the guy, the Blagojevich pick. I can't even think of his name anymore.
Burris.
You know, give him a shot. If I was Blagojevich, that's exactly I'd put up this guy that has nothing. I mean, wouldn't you? I mean, wouldn't you put up somebody who is a pretty good guy and, you know, happens to be this and that and happens to, you know, be on the level and he didn't pay him any money? I'd do something like that. It's called CYA. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's called, you know, it's setting up a booby trap. And to sit there and, you know, make these people look stupid. Oh, see, I was just joking about that on the phone. They're tapping my line. You see, America? I mean, Blagojevich could weasel a snake his way out of this. Okay? By being, all right? But, you know, what does Harry Reid do? He shoots himself in the foot, and he shoots you in the face, and he sits there and, you know, what does Pelosi do? Oh, she does the same crap. And, oh, we're going to get business done. Well, when are we going to sit here and stop these people dividing us on these stupid little things? I mean, you know, honestly, you know that this is true, Bob. All right? Yeah, all right. The guns are out there. It's a genie out of the bottle. Can we get the genie back in the bottle? Can we? Honestly, seriously?
Are we willing to even make the attempt?
I'm not willing, because that's, you know, that goes against some advice I adhere to that I really like. You know, those that will sacrifice a little temporary safety, you know, or security for a little bit of safety, you know, They deserve neither. And I kind of buy that. Why? No. Why? Because I want my guns? No, it's not that I want my guns. Why? Because I don't want people coming and busting into my house to look for guns, to look for terrorism, to look for, you know, fill in the blank. Okay? And when we sit here and look at a Republican
Wait. Time. Okay? Call quick time. Okay. When they do, and they do, the police do, bust down your door, rightly or wrongly. They make a lot of mistakes.
Yes, indeed.
And you're a 90-year-old grandma in Atlanta, and it's a no-knock warrant, and they come through the door, and at 90 years old, you've got your gun, and you're going to hang on to your rights, and you start blazing at the intruder.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? You just became a Gazan, because they will shoot you where you stand. Because they got more guns than you got any day of the week.
True.
Now, I'm not preaching at you. I mean, No.
But that's what I
asked Sandra earlier in the program. Why can't, you know, gun-fascinated America understand that if you do engage in home defense in this country, and it happens to be people with badges, or it happens to be people with warrants, or it happens to be anybody that you question the legitimacy of their entry into your home, the minute you chamber around, sweetheart, you just became a Gazan.
You don't have to even, but see, you don't have to chamber around to get shot in the back while you're cuffed laying face down on the ground.
Well, no, you don't.
You don't have to have a round as you walk out of your door with your wallet in your hand. All right? When the Israelis want to strike at you, or when the overseers want to come down on you, officers, you know, when they want to come down on you, they will make up an excuse for it. If they feel, even if they make a stupid mistake that takes your life away and then forces your family to pay for a funeral that you couldn't afford, they make up an excuse and they'll cover butts and they'll do everything that possible and there won't be nothing
there. Oh, see, and you just raised another one. We'll see news footage every now and then of the funerals of, you know, they always use the tormented English. The funeral of a perceived martyr today in the West Bank, a martyr's funeral, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, thereby, you know, delegitimizing whatever.
Yep.
But you see the community get together,
mm-hmm.
and they've got the box, and they put the body in the box, and they drape a flag over the box, and the whole community carries the box to the place where they put it in the dirt. That is how, frankly, the poor deal with the fact that the state doesn't give a damn about what happens to the corpse. That is a community response. And if it happens in the context of someone being unjustly blown away, like, say, 40 civilians who were moved from one area into another house that was then targeted and wasted, you know, it's supremely insensitive and, frankly, inhumane. Why are they making such a big deal about it? Why don't they just bury the poor kid? Because that's what they're damned well doing. It is an act of community. And the fact that we don't speak the language doesn't make it any less so.
No.
Oi.
And I hear you, and I just kind of want to get to the thing is like, you know, one of the things, instead of, you know, saying, you know, how you're taking a pen, you know, and you're, instead of giving them a trach, you need to give these guys a lobotomy. You can't feed them ammunition like this. You can't, in a sense, like, you know, what's the way to stop gun violence? You know, it's not to take guns away. I know as much as I sound. It's to change the people that touch these guns. All right? I mean, I'm talking violence. I ain't talking the accidents that happen to stupid people. It just happened to cousins of my, by marriage, cousins of mine in Alaska. One of them was there when his friend, puts a gun, you know, and plays around with a gun and gets shot and kills his friend. You know, I mean, I could tell you all kinds of stories like that. I mean, I'm related to a real couple by marriage. I'm related to some real doozies, man. And I'll tell you some stories. You'd be like, what? But anyway, I mean, the thing is like, you have to change, I believe, you have to change, you know, like Obama, he better do his thing, but, you know, he has to do a lot of things. Just like, it's like, and it's not even Obama. This is a bunch of bullshit, okay? This is one of those things that, the thing that kept echoing in my mind as you were running through the presidents, it's not the president's fault. It's not Polk's fault. It's not Garfield or any of these other bastards. It's not Bush's fault. It's our fault. It's your fault. It's my fault. It's Angus's fault. It's my wife's fault and my kids' fault. It's our fault for allowing these things to be acceptable, for allowing these things to go on. Now, granted, we're doing what we can by talking to people and talking to each other and whatever we do, by doing what we do, we're doing this to change. We're growing from 8% to 50%. But we need to still solidify the ranks. The education still needs to be continuing. We can never sit here and let up. We can never sit here and allow the tricks of the old to ensnare us and trap us and bowl us back to the ground. We need to be the sleeping giant. We need to sit here and realize that these little tiny Lilliputians and these Goldbergs of our, you know, of this construct are these things here that we really can't afford we can't even afford to entertain them, because that's the entertainment while everything else gets sucked away. And I know that.
Right, and we become the bread and the circus. No, I understand, Albert. I do completely.
I get shades of nobody is going to do this for us. They don't want. I mean, the only people that have.
No. Nobody is going to give universal health care to America. America will demand and create universal health care as a function of grassroots activism. I agree wholeheartedly. It's bottom up stuff. It really, really is. Because, already when you talk about this idea of giving something, then you've instantaneously played into the paradigm of the right because, well, they just want us to get, what'll it do to business? Well, you know what? After everything we've heard about, the GM and Chrysler and Ford, and I know you and I have a slight difference of opinion on that, the fact of the matter is, if we'd had universal health care 15 years ago, if we'd had universal health care when we started talking about it at the beginning of the Clinton administration, this wouldn't have happened to the big three, because they would have been competing on an even footing with the rest of the international market.
And I hear you, and I do hear you. But I think it would have happened anyway. They still would have made Hummers. They still would have made this. They still would have made stupid vehicles. They would have made ugly vehicles. They would have made cheap vehicles. They would have made vehicles that make no sense to repair. They would have made fuel filters inside fuel tanks.
Yeah, I know. Rub it in.
I just got to say these things. I mean, this is how they operate. Like they laugh. You know, people are still buying toothpaste and Q-tips. Of course, I am going to buy my toothpaste, and I will always have Q-tips. Always. I need them. I'll make them if I can't get them. All right, Q-tips, because once we lose Q-tips, we have no civilization. But at the same time, when we sit here and look at breaking down into, all these products that you purchase, right? I told you, we went through cloth diapers, so we had a good washing machine. However, just because it's a good washing machine don't mean anything. I mean, it just does a certain thing to a certain length of time until it's designed to break. Remember, it was going to be a service economy? Remember this crap?
Yeah.
Okay, well, service economy is code word for a corporation to make shit that breaks. And then it's easy to take apart and repair, or lucratively take apart and repair for somebody who has the tools and the know-how to do it. You know, it's like, what the hell's wrong with my car? I have no idea. You have to go into the mechanic who purchased the computer that can sit here and hook up to your car and tell you what's wrong with it. Okay? And then, this part's in here, this part's in here. Oh, let's make it all one big piece so it costs 15 times as much to fix. Oh, let's make it fail every 50,000 miles. I mean, they're like, what the hell is that? They don't build let's make it fail after 1,000 washes. So they have to go out and, completely redo things. And
at least a hard drive manufacturer tells you how many hours you can expect to get out of a hard drive.
Well, then that's a beautiful thing. I mean, that is. And hard drives are, and that's back to the nice technology. But now we're talking about the big ticket items. We're talking about items that, you need a washing machine. If you don't have a washing machine, what are you going to do? You're going to go down to the river? You're going to go
boil it in the yard and get out the washing board. Yep. Hey, Albert, I got to roll, brother. We've had a wonderful conversation.
I'm sorry.
Hey, don't apologize. Take care. Get your hands off my junk.
Hey.
We'll see you, Albert. From far Wisconsin,
our buddy Albert. And that brings the show to a close. And I thank you for helping to make a wonderful Monday night program. Somehow or another, this just felt like a whole bunch of good conversations. Sometimes they do. And I understand, you know, there are times when I just understand better, for at least from my perspective and for my sake, what a good thing we've got going on here. Listening to John Fox last night, what a good thing we've got going on here. You know, everything that happens on the horn, Guy James, what a good thing we've got going on here. Rick Smith, Rick Goodner, Billy Shears, what a good thing we've got going on here. And it's because of you. Yeah, we're willing to do the work, but you're willing to keep it going. It's because of you. And it's because of the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. It's because of them standing upstream for everybody downstream. I hope you didn't mind the little personal aside there. That was really more about how we all are situated than anything personal. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to John Fox and Peter Godbold, respectively, our chief engineer and our IT professional. Thank you to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, the most overworked man in liberal talk. Thank you, Ben. Back tomorrow evening. Guy James will be your way 3 o'clock Eastern time tomorrow. That's when the Horn broadcast day begins. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
And a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a brand new week of Conversation Radio right here on America's liberal voice, The Horn. I am, of course, Bob Kincaid, but you know that. Although there are the occasional stray brand-new listeners who don't know that, so that's who I am, and I'm so glad you're you, and I'm so glad that we are all here together to begin this new week. Let's see. Reviewing last week, we got 4 days of broadcasting and 1 day of technical nightmare, but it wasn't for want of intention. This week, we're shooting for all five. I tell you, we're shooting for all 5 days. And I'm sorry about the mix-ups and mistakes, but some of these things are rather hard to avoid. But we will eschew missing any days this week. We, you know,
me, that mouse in my pocket.
We are not amused.
Oh, I tell you what, it's coming. I'm glad the weekend has passed, and wonderful show from John Fox last night. You know, there is some actual live programming on the Horn over the weekend. The rest of the programming is stunningly awesome as well. I hope you got a chance maybe to listen to Rick Smith in the previous hour. That was his show from yesterday. He, of course, is very much pro-labor, very much for the working class, very much the straight-up, hard-working, liberal, progressive, and he comes to you from Pennsylvania. And I hope, drop him a line, let him know that you think he's doing a good job. There's about 8 dozen places to go this evening. Dim Leader had his farewell press conference today, and that was abundantly weird. And it seems appropriate that we would start with that. And, in fact, what we will particularly start with is a creation from the mind of Sue, ELO, our chat room den mother, moderator, videographer, and, autodidact genius as far as I am concerned. And it's a little goodbye medley for Dim Leader. And it seems, like I said, in as much as he gave his farewell to the press today and generally went out the same way he came in other words, making a braying ass of himself. No, let's run this. And thanks and appreciation to Sue for providing it to us.